Blog Talk Radio.
Do you love the outdoors? Do you want to help make a difference for the planet? Then get involved in Collectively Rewilding. Collectively Rewilding is a movement to restore degraded ecosystems and reinvigorate sustainable traditions almost lost by working together. It's based on the idea that we can achieve more by working together than we can by working alone. Sharing the skill sets we have built over the years with each other and providing the community support we all need when there is so much work to be done in finding a sustainable future. To join our community here in Collectively Rewilding, go to www.collectivelyrewilding.com. Let's bring nature back into our lives in a community built for the wild in all of us.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison, the show about everything and nothing at all.
You know what I think we should do? I think you should join us for Dynamic Word Bible Studies, where I am always hosting. My name is Felicia DeRozier, and I have two amazing co-hosts.
Cross, the favorite.
You wish.
This is Mariah, the real favorite child.
Oh, sure.
We spend a lot of time learning about the Bible and possibly a little time learning about humility. That would be awesome, right?
Yeah, Cross. Yeah, Mariah.
We air live every Wednesday from 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to 10:30. Right now we're going through the book of Romans, but we're going to start moving into the Gospel of John. We're going to learn about Jesus. We're going to learn about living and walking in the Spirit and learning to be a little humble with those that we live with. It's going to be a great time. I can't wait for you to join us. Right, guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to take your power back by following the principles of the universal laws, earth-based spirituality such as pantheonism, shamanism, and personal alchemy? Are you sick of giving your power away to power-hungry gurus, the corrupt government, the globalist, and realize you have a higher purpose on this planet? That you are gods and goddesses that need to snap out of amnesia and reclaim your birthright? We're Darren and Dr. Joanna Wells, the Double B, founder of the Gods of Amenti, psychic intuitives, transformation coaches, training others to uncover lost knowledge and reclaim their sovereignty. Here to guide you every Sunday at 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and Wednesday 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on our show, Living Beyond the Matrix, on FreedomizerRadio.com. Call-in number is 319-527-6208.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from, my fellow Liberty lovers. This is Amber S. from Living with Freedom Ministries, reminding you to tune in on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific Time, for the Living with Freedom Show, where we'll embrace what living with freedom can look like physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and in everyday life. That's 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific, here on Freedomizer Radio.
Global government, the mystery school, Agenda 2030, chemtrails and geoengineering, manufactured disasters.
We live in a time when awareness about current events and big media deception is critical to be prepared for the events that are rapidly descending upon us. This is Russ from Delivering the Truth and Exposing the Lies. Join Diana and me every Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. as we expose the truth big media keeps lying about.
Herbal medicine, the globalist's real agenda, seen through the propaganda.
Thursday nights at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll see you there.
Hello, I'm Mike, my birthing partner, and I just got our new Lysnica Freedom microchips. These microchips are awesome. They help me keep the freedom I used to before I enrolled into Southern Hampshire Institute of Technology.
I am Jamar. I am friends with Mike and his birthing partner. We met at SHIT.
I am a liberal media major. I also just got a license to Freedom Microchip. SNSHIT recently mandates everyone on campus get their Freedom Microchip. I jumped on the Lysnica joint.
This Freedom Chip grants me the freedom to go everywhere I was allowed to before COVID. Now this chip tells me when I am and am not allowed to go outside. It also tracks my boosters. If I'm not up to date on a chip, it tells me when I need to get it by.
This chip is sweet. Without this Freedom Chip, no one is allowed on our campus. I scan my hand whenever I want to pay for something. It also calls for an ambulance when I get another heart attack from a booster, which is totally not a heart attack from getting a gene therapy.
These Freedom Chips are free. You can go to any drugstore or China Mart. An employee with inserted in your wrist.
Remember, it is not the mark of the beast. You just need to let Lysnica track and trace your every move. You just need a Freedom Chip to buy, sell, work, and live. When you get a microchip, look for the Lysnica Freedom Microchips. They are sweet.
Okay, class, we want to talk about what we learned during the lockdown. The first question is, what did we learn during the quarantine, kids? Susie,
that government overreach is real.
What about you, Johnny? We went from home of the brave to home of the government slave. And you, Michael?
We need to refresh the tree of liberty.
What about you, Diane?
So many sheep are willing to give up their rights because of a little fear.
Very good, class.
Hello, Freedomizers. I am Broccoli Man. When I am not fighting crime, I listen to the Proof Negative radio show.
I am the Wireza. Not only do I forbid you to listen to Freedomizer radio and the Proof Negative radio show, I am going to demand you wear a mask and get your naked body scan. We need to protect the one world government. You getting the real information hurts a crime syndicate. Do not listen to Proof Negative. You must now disrobe this instant so I can check your person for a constitution or cash money.
Anyway, listen to Proof Negative on Freedomizer Radio. Weeknights 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. FreedomizerRadio.com.
Now, back to Proof Negative on Freedomizer Radio. Welcome to the Proof Negative Radio Show, right here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Now sit back and enjoy the show.
I also got a sports betting angle that's foolproof. Since y'all want to let all these transgenders up in the league, I became almost a millionaire betting on Leah Thomas's big ass winning all them swimming meets.
Welcome back to the JP React Channel, my beautiful, freedom-loving friend, where we like to call out the lies, hypocrisy, corruption of tyrants and Satan, shine the light of awareness on woke absurdities, and highlight the amazing work of other freedom fighters. I am, of course, biased. I think comedy is a beautiful way to help accomplish all those goals, and we've got a good one for you today. But first, I do want to let you know I'm sporting one of the world's finest farmer's tans. Thank you very much. At a gun range all day yesterday, and I got a little too much sun for my albino self. Also want to let you know, if you have yet to subscribe to this channel, please do so. Help support the channel, help support me and the mission and my team and what we're all trying to accomplish together. So please take a moment, hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. To the video at hand, this is a gentleman talking to the Irving City Council in Texas, just outside of Dallas. And what you'll quickly realize is it's all a bit. But he delivers it masterfully, just dry, deadpan, which I love. You'll see the city council people laughing while trying not to laugh. But he hits some important points, certainly when we get to the transgender athletes and how sports betting can really, you can win big betting on the men in the women's league. Yeah, I don't know if that's comedy. That's actually just a darn good idea. And this post originated on JVT Entertain's Twitter. And you can see he's a producer for Primetime with Alex Stein at The Blaze. So I don't know the exact ins and outs, but I believe this guy is somehow associated with Alex Stein. If you know who he is, Alex Stein is always in front of city councils doing funny stuff.
Yo, Irving City Council, how you doing? My name is Tiny, and I'm a professional sports gambler. But unfortunately, my career is at a standstill because I got six baby mamas all in the DFW Metroplex. So I can't live in a state that's got legal gambling in a sense. It will be March Madness. I'm coming up here to beg y'all to make sports gambling legal in the city so I can stack my paper and pay for the illegitimate children. I know some people think sports betting is risky, but I got an unbeaten system that can put money in all y'all pockets. Seriously. My system is easy.
By the way, look at this guy. He's loving it.
I bet on the blackest and darkest teams in college sports. Because blacker the berry, sweeter the juice, and better the jump shot. I also got a sports betting angle that's foolproof. Since y'all want to let all these transgenders up in the league, I became almost a millionaire betting on Leah Thomas's big ass winning all them swimming meets. And just like these transgenders.
He's just trying to hide it. This guy's not trying to hide it. But, man, you just have to appreciate these city council people, the way they function in these roles. It's so dry and serious. Then you have this guy coming into their atmosphere, acting very serious himself. But, obviously, if you're using common sense, you quickly realize he's not serious. So, to me, the funniest part of all this is watching the city councilmen try to process what's going on.
And their swimmers? My swimmers are strong.
This guy.
That's why I got so many baby mamas. But you know what that means? I got a lot of bills to pay. So I'm sick of risking my life and my freedom on gambling illegally on transgender athletes. So I beg you, Irving City Council, to please legalize sports gambling because I can't afford to be up in the penitentiary doing 5 to 10 years on some weak-ass gambling charge. I also would like it if y'all could give me some rep.
Yeah, you have to wonder, like, these people, I don't know if they have a sense of humor, but they're very stoic right now.
Give me some reputations because Irving is hella white and I'm hella black. My great-grandfather was a slave in Mississippi, so y'all owe me for real.
1 minute left.
And I'll say one more time. You white city council people need to legitimize gambling.
You made the gambling about race. That's masterful.
Start putting y'all's money on these transgender swimmers because they got propellers in their back-friendly swimsuits. And remember to always bet on black. I always want to shout out to my homie, DeMarcus Calloway, who is locked up for murder, but he didn't do anything wrong but stab a police officer, which is, according to the BLM movement, is okay. It's time to get paid, bitches. Legalize it and free my homie, DeMarcus.
Okay. Alex Stein, followed by Emma West.
Yeah, okay. So that aired on Alex Stein, and that sounds like Alex Stein's writing or thing. Man, I so appreciate that. That was excellent delivery. I would guess, like, the challenge reading, pronouncing things was part of the bit. Masterful. I don't know about you. I think we need more laughs, specifically laughs about what's going on in the world and how that skewered racism, transgender athletes competing in the women's division. By the way, sometimes people suggest to me, like, JP, you should do things like that. Go in front of city council or do man on the street stuff. And while I think it would be great content to borrow a quote from this fine gentleman, it is hella uncomfortable. Like, it's so, you have to be in that kind of position. You have to be able to feel so much awkwardness, discomfort. I don't like doing it. I've done a little bit of it in the past. I don't know that I'll do much more, but it is just so freaking uncomfortable. So hats off to the people who actually have the courage to do it. Thank you for watching, my beautiful, free, and loving friend. I look forward to seeing you on our next video. But first, here's a special message brought to you by the Dallas City Council.
Hi. I don't know about you.
The polling is very good for Donald Trump. Not universally, but pretty much, almost universally. When Rachel Maddow was having her 27-minute meltdown about Ronna McDaniel 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago, she was saying how dire the circumstance is because, according to the polls, Donald Trump is going to be the next president. Even she admits it. And that brings me to an actress who most people may not even know, but her hysteria is proof of the thing you just said, Stu. I knew this actress from What's Love Got to Do with It? The great biopic about Tina Turner's life based on her book, I, Tina. And this actress played Tina Turner's mother in the movie. Remember her?
I'm her mother.
Just Anna May's mother. Y'all believe that?
I can't believe that.
No. My goodness, what's a fine young thing like you doing with two grown daughters?
Hey, Miss Ellie.
How can I help you, Mr.
Turner. Ike Turner.
I didn't pay for Hannah Mae to come all the way up here from Nutbush, Tennessee to be wasting time with a bunch of musicians.
But wait a minute, Mama, it wasn't like that. Anna Mae.
Ellie,
but Mama,
take Anna Mae in the back. Mr. Turner. I don't know what you had in mind, but this little girl's going to be a nurse. Bring a steady paycheck.
Great clip and great movie. And Jennifer Lewis, one N, unlike the other Jennifer, who's got two, did a great job. And now these days she's starring in the sitcom Black-ish. She's 67 years old, and she is really, really upset about the prospect of Donald Trump retaking the presidency. She sat in an interview with Zerlina Maxwell, a host of the radio show Mornings with Zerlina, right here on Sirius XM. Take a listen.
And we do nothing. We sit on our couches. Oh, I don't believe in voting. You fucking idiot.
Mm.
If that man gets in, as soon as he takes the oath, he will have generals walk down the steps of the Capitol. He will take a hammer and break the glass where the Constitution is, and he will tear it up in our faces.
Mm.
And say, now, I'm the king of the fucking world. You will bow down, bitches. He will punish everybody that didn't vote for him. Let me tell y'all how I know this shit. I know it because I know what mental illness looks like.
Mm.
That's true.
That mania is unstoppable. See, this motherfucker's Hitler.
Mm.
He didn't come to play.
Very dramatic. I mean, guys, that's super dramatic and very well, you know, delivered, right? I mean, we have to admit, like, I'm scared.
I found it very compelling. I love that, you know, I used to have Zerlina Maxwell on my Fox shows, but I love the response, like, he will fucking send the generals and he will tear up the Constitution and break the glass.
That was an incredible clip. It really was. And, you know, we sometimes look at the way that the left treats Trump and reacts to him. And, you know, the fact that they're trying to put him in prison, they're trying to throw him off ballots, they're doing all these things. It's because in so many people in public life, in the media, in politics, who are on the left, what you just heard is their entire internal monologue. That is exactly what is inspiring them to act the way they are. When they seem irrational, when they seem like they're doing these things, they're saying that democracy is under attack and that's why we're trying to remove the other guy who's on the ballot. That sort of behavior can only come from an internal monologue just like that. And if you justify the world in those sorts of terms, of course you can really kind of justify any behavior to stop that from happening. That's a fascinating clip. I think first of all, hilarious, but also very, very revealing.
Yeah. That's why we played it so high up.
I mean, but it's also just it's such a bizarre fantasy. I mean, the generals are going to – what generals? What's going to happen? Like, January 20th, Trump's going to go to the White House. He's going to call the Joint Chiefs of Staff and say, like, I'm the king now. I need you to march down the Capitol steps so everyone knows I'm the king now. I'm going to go to the National Archives. I'm going to tear the Constitution up.
Yeah, you need to break the glass.
And then I'll disband Congress. Like, what are you talking about? Like, none of this. This is like an opium fantasy. It's completely bizarre. It's a very strange thing to even talk about. But as Stu points out, they think this is going to happen. These are the same people who thought that we were 5 minutes away from losing, our democracy because QAnon shaman, you know, stood on the well of the Senate. It's bizarre.
Yeah, and then of course she gives it up when she was like, "How do I know it's going to happen? Because I know what mental illness looks like." Well, that's
she
true.
Said as she proved her point. Yes, absolutely. Has there ever been a more I did not believe a lot of the things she said in that monologue, but when she said, "I know what mental illness looked like," I believed every word of it.
It was meta. It was very meta. I was having one of those moments. So yeah, that's just a little sampling. I mean, I will say while I'm on the topic of hysterical leftist meltdowns, did you guys see, you know, Elie Mystal, who writes for The Nation? He's one of the most just angry, racist people on X, and that's saying something. And, he goes on MSNBC, Joy Reid's show. She's more racist than he is, but, I mean, it's a tight race. He wrote this scathing opinion piece about Justice Stephen Breyer, who wrote the following of the Supreme Court, saying, "The Supreme Court I served on," he's retired, "was made up of friends. And it pretty much went downhill from there," says Elie Mystal. So Breyer wrote this op-ed in the New York Times about friendship amongst the court's justices, which has always been something that I've known of since I was a law student and then a lawyer and then covered the high court for Fox for 3 years. I love this about our Supreme Court. It's an example for us all that, I mean, they are so divided ideologically and always have been. Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Justice Scalia saw absolutely nothing the same way. I mean, they're just completely different philosophies. And yet they were, if not best friends, close to best friends. They vacationed together all the time. They hung out together all the time. They respected each other's intellect. They understood they were very different ideologically, but there was kindness and respect. And I think maybe even, you know, the love of good friends there. Well, Elie Mystal's pissed about that because Justice Breyer is coming out to say, look, let me tell you something. This is like a body that we can still look up to. And this is Elie's reaction. The title of the piece is "The Supreme Court I Served On Was Made Up of Friends. It Pretty Much Went Downhill From There." He says, it's about how some of the justices used to play bridge together. That's those two as well. While others went to the opera and how they would share jokes over lunch. The point of his piece, to the extent there was one, was to distract readers from their decisions and any number of horrid decisions emanating from the corrupt and broken Supreme Court and burnish the institution's reputation at a time when the people have had just enough of these justices. Talking about their low approval ratings, he says, it's our opinion that the opinion exposes the court as a partisan cabal beholden to the Republican Party or the conservative culture warriors. The Roberts Court is set on devouring the rights of women, people of color, and the LGBTQ community while preserving the rights of mass shooters to amass deadly arsenals. But Breyer wants us to know that in my 28 years on the court, I did not hear a voice raised in anger. Why the hell not, he says. Why weren't you, Steve, sitting there screaming at your conservative colleagues or asking everyone who would listen to stop your, quote, friends from hurting people? Why do you think intellectual detachment in the face of active horror is a virtue when it's more like a sin? Maybe Breyer can enjoy a night at the opera with people who think a 10-year-old girl can be raped and forced to bring the pregnancy to term as a matter of law, but I can't. Maybe Breyer should have spent less time having lunch with his conservative colleagues and more time having lunch with their victims. And just a couple more. There are a lot of people who believe that politics and policy differences can and should be ignored among colleagues and friends. They believe that the fact that one person supports, say, amnesty for migrants who are out of status, while another supports shooting them to death should their children miraculously manage to squeeze through the razor wire barricade erected to drown them, shouldn't prevent these two people from enjoying a few beers together. The audience for Breyer's anecdotes is likely the same demographic as Breyer himself, old, straight, white, college-educated men, and people who desperately want to attain the status and prestige of old, straight, white, college-educated men. Breyer can maintain the intellectual gooberism of institutional collegiality in the face of real-world harms because those harms are not visited on him. He's not the guy the cops choked to death. He's not the immigrant being deported away from his children. He's not the woman being forced to incubate a rapist baby against their will. This is despite the fact that Breyer voted with the leftist of the left, the biggest liberal vote on the court, for his entire nearly 30-year tenure. It's not good enough. Why? Because he's nice to the Republicans. He doesn't demonize them. And, of course, his biggest sin, he's a, say it together, a straight, white, college-educated man. And that's really the problem, Elie Mystel. This is crazy-ass, racist, classist shit. It's fine. We know he'll get away with it. But it does show you the extent of, it's not just Trump derangement syndrome. It's like Republican derangement syndrome, Dave. It's something beyond just Trump here.
Yeah, it's hate. It's a preaching of hatred. It's preaching that if somebody disagrees with you politically, or if somebody is of a different faith, or if somebody views the world in a way that is different from the way that you view the world, you should hate them. Not just vote a different way, but you shouldn't be in their presence, right? This goes back to the taunting of Trump officials in restaurants, and don't be polite to these people, right? Like, make them be social outcasts. And I mean, it'll destroy our society. You know, you were reading that, and I was thinking back, like, the last year that I was really in theater was 2012, and I was the host of a short play series in downtown New York. And part of the bit was, and it wasn't a bit really, like, what was that I was conservative, I was a Republican, and I would have fun with the audience. This was in you know, Bowery Poetry Club. Everybody that, I mean, they weren't Democrats, they were communists, right? But we'd have fun, and after the show we'd have interesting conversations, and it's like, well, you know, Dave, Condoleezza Rice is interesting, right? And it was okay. That seems like a million years ago to me now on all sides. I mean, it just couldn't happen today.
I want to tell you about Gen 90, the latest breakthrough in skincare from our friends over at Genucel. Those bags under your eyes from lack of sleep, being overworked, stress, and even those seasonal allergies that come with spring weather, Gen 90 can help. It also helps around the eyes, the forehead, crow's feet, laugh lines, even the chin, and it starts working in seconds. Gen 90 technology is luxurious. It's silky smooth, Now you can get GenuCell's classic under-eye bags and puffiness serum with every Gen 90 order. And also get their luxurious GenuCell XV collagen builder moisturizer with vitamin C and hyaluronic acid in a pure natural base for stunning results day after day. Go to GenuCell.com right now for incredible packages, over 50% off during GenuCell's spring sale. Results are guaranteed or your money back, plus get an extra 10% off, automatically apply to checkout. GenuCell.com/MK60, check it out. Order right now and get a free limited edition spa box and bonus gifts and free shipping. That's GenuCell.com/MK60. GenuCell.com/MK60. Hey, thanks so much for watching. If you like what you just saw, hit the subscribe button for more clips and full episodes.
Now to a dude called Hassan, who is some sort of social justice warrior from America, a streamer who's in Australia at the moment. Like, we don't have enough lefties losing it already here. He attended a pro-Palestinian protest, but while there, some of his fans were not happy with him because he was drinking Coke Zero. He wasn't being sufficiently anti-Israel. Have a look.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm going really to say you need to stop drinking Coke Zero on stream.
Why?
Boycott.
Wait, is it?
You're preaching pro-Palestine and you're drinking boycott stuff, please.
Thank you.
At least pretend. Do it off stream. Please.
Okay, I'll put it in. I'll put it in a glass. Is Pepsi okay?
No.
Okay. No soda.
I didn't know it was like that. I'm trying to stop it even now.
Yes, Hassan, at least pretend. Drink it off stream. And no, Pepsi is not okay. Now to this young lady, or I don't know, she identifies as all the pronouns. He, she, they. This is M. Adams, an educator and a leader of a group called the Movement for Black Lives.
So as Ananda mentioned, my name is M. Adams. I use all gender pronouns said respectfully. So that means it is appropriate for you to refer to me as she, her. You could also use he or him or they or them. All of those work for me, feel good to me, and recognize me for how I want to be seen.
She called herself a non-dimension there. I haven't heard that one before. I'm going to add that to my long list of identities. Now to Melbourne, Australia's lefty losing it capital, where they were again blocking roads, causing mayhem in the CBD. And this short video was proudly posted by a Greens politician who was there, Samantha Ratnam.
Does Albanese represent us?
No!
Does Penny Wong represent us?
No!
Hey, your party is in an unofficial alliance with Labor. If you don't like their policies, I don't know, withdraw your support, but I doubt that's going to be happening anytime soon. Now let's end on this work of beauty. Watch as this climate change crazy BBC journalist is fact-checked and humbled by Dr. Irfan Ali, the president of Guyana. Let's start with the BBC introduction. You know straight away what his angle is going to be.
Welcome to Hard Talk. I'm Stephen Sacker, and today I am in Guyana, South America, a country of some 800,000 people, which right now can claim to have the fastest growing economy in the world. The reason? Oil. Vast reserves of the stuff located offshore. My guest today is Guyana's president, Irfan Ali. His country's newfound oil riches have stoked tensions with neighboring Venezuela. They've also raised questions about this country's vulnerability to climate change. So, is oil really a blessing or a curse?
Spoiler, it's a blessing. Yes, it is. It's a blessing. The oil is always a blessing. Now, let the humbling begin. Take it away, Dr. Ali.
Let's take a big picture look at what's going on here. Over the next decade, two decades, it is expected that there will be $150 billion worth of oil and gas extracted off your coast. It's an extraordinary figure, but think of it in practical terms. That means, according to many experts, more than 2 billion tons
of carbon emissions will come from your seabed, from those reserves, and be released into the atmosphere. I don't know if you as a head of state went to the COP in Dubai.
Let me stop you right there. Do you know that Guyana has a forest forever that is the size of England and Scotland combined? A forest that stores 19.5 gigatons of carbon? A forest that we have kept alive? A forest that we have kept alive?
Does that give you the right?
No,
does
no,
that
no,
give
no.
you the right to release
that
all of this carbon?
Fancy berating the leader of a country with the fastest growing economy in the world. The arrogance, the smug, sanctimonious arrogance of the BBC. Why shouldn't a relatively poor South American nation enrich itself and its citizens via fossil fuels, just like every other advanced economy in the world has done? Now watch as the president of Guyana gives our lefty losing it a lesson in the importance of preservation.
Does that give you the right to lecture us on climate change? I am going to lecture you on climate change because we have kept this forest alive that stores 19.5 gigatons of carbon that you enjoy, that the world enjoy, that you don't pay us for, that you don't value, that you don't see a value in, that the people of Guyana has kept alive. Guess what? We have the lowest deforestation rate in the world.
Okay, how many genders are there?
Many. It's actually like quantifiable.
Well, how about a number? Quantifiable, good.
No, it's so many because...
Give me a number, any number.
Okay, well, the way the data breaks down, so this is why you don't understand it.
Number.
There's so many. The way that the...
So many. Not so many, not a number.
The chromosomes actually break down with intersex gender and the way that it actually happens, that is the starting point that you learn in like fifth grade. But when you actually
in like
real experiment, you learn that the way that data breaks down when it comes to...
Can you give me a number
gender,
or not? Number?
A number? You have two. That's sixth grade science. When you move on, there are hundreds of different categories.
So what you learn in sixth grade becomes less true as you get older? Like gravity becomes less true? Newton's third law becomes less true?
In order to understand the concept of gender, when you break it down into actual
gender and sex are directly related.
And sex, it breaks down into hundreds of different categories that actually differentiate between just two genders. What you're saying is there are facts and you don't believe in there being opinions.
Yes, I am saying that there are facts.
This is a scientific fact that you, if you talk to any biologist, will learn.
So in biology, they teach you that there's XX and XY chromosomes. So give me a number of how many genders there are.
Hundreds, many.
Unlimited, right?
It breaks
so
down in
it's
so
anything
many
you
categories.
Want to be, anything you feel.
No, it's what scientists determine given specific categories.
XY.
Why do you need a number if you're...
Bingo. Why do you need a number? That's a great question.
You literally have no idea how it works. You're
because then you could self-identify to be anything you want at any time.
Literally, biologists are saying that this is the way
the
gender actually breaks down.
So you would accept the argument that you can self-identify to be anything at any time?
Yes, because literally biologists...
Okay. That's what's wrong with not having a number.
There are hundreds of different numbers.
So
hundreds
why not,
of different ways of gender.
So, like I said earlier, I could be a bobcat, I could be a fox, I could be a snake.
Literally not even the case.
I could be anything.
No, you are literally saying that
so
people who not the actual
X, XY, two genders, two sexes, they're directly
you're
related.
You're just repeating words over and over
because
again.
Because it's true, and you're not disproving it.
I am.
How?
I have an argument. Like,
seriously,
there's nothing there.
No, I know, but it's more...
She keeps interrupting.
It's
good. I like it.
That
she doesn't like my face.
I'm going to be here and say these things more than I think I'm going to convince him.
I hear you.
I think you're idiots. I think it's mainly to just have an air of, like, if you're going to come in here, you're going to be uncomfortable. You're going to have to put up a good fight. Which you're not doing. You're really quoting, like, super basic, shitty science that is just meant to...
But, okay. So, but again, you don't have a number. I just want to recap.
Hundreds.
So where would you put... Okay, so the data breaks down into... Very simple predominant categories, XX and XY. And that's,
no.
No? Oh, so there's not male and female.
I mean, to a certain degree, but there are different ways that breaks down. When you actually get into sex and gender and X and Y chromosomes, it doesn't just break down in a way. There's many different ways.
And how would you categorize society then? Do you think men and women are categorically different?
Why would go by specific scientific criteria and then go off of what that study and that information actually says? Because that information breaks down into much more difficult and complex things than you can just say in 5 seconds with two different genders. I think what happens is you don't understand science and scientific
So
you just want to put forth this fascist simple.
Oh, fascist simple. Here we go. That's
that will keep you.
So what is fascist about saying there's two genders?
Is you're just being completely not faithful to what actual science is telling you.
No, science is quite simple. That
there's an oppressive narrative.
Oh, oppressive.
So,
and now I'm oppressive. How am I being oppressive? The truth comes out eventually. So, how am I being oppressive?
Yeah, you're being oppressive.
How am I being oppressive?
You're being oppressive by denying people the ability to have.
How am I denied anyone anything? Okay, denying people's identity. People can identify however they want. I'm only going to use two genders. That's the way
eventually you're the problem and you're going to get pushed out of the way.
Anyone who does not identify by like a female or male, you can identify them as an animal.
I haven't said that.
You could identify yourself.
I think history has sort of proven where your type of people are.
No, I asked if I could be a bobcat and somebody said yes earlier and you said no.
You're a bobcat.
I'm a bobcat. I can be whatever I want to be. I could be a tree. I could be an 85-year-old person. Why not?
All right. I'm late to class. Have fun, Bobcat.
Okay.
For all the liberals telling us now, take the vaccine and shut up, I bring this up because there's an avian flu outbreak now, and absolutely nobody trusts the government at all because they lied to us about things like the vaccine, masks, and the lab leak. There's a great piece at the Wall Street Journal, highly recommended by Alyssa Finley, another great writer over there. She talks about avian flu and the experts who cried wolf. She's talking about how the Biden administration officials are saying that avian flu vaccines have already been developed. Oh, boy, here we go. And could be rapidly manufactured. But don't be surprised if Americans don't line up to get them. Gee, you think? She notes public health experts are blaming anti-vaxxers. That's us, evil anti-vaxxers. Meanwhile, we're no such thing, keep in mind. That's their label for us. They're blaming us for sowing distrust in jabs. But 4 years ago, these same people, along with the press, fueled skepticism about the Trump administration's effort to develop a vaccine. During the summer and autumn of 2020, they warned the president was in a dangerous rush. Turns out that some of this dangerous rush later on may have been true. But that's not the point I'm trying to make now. The point I'm trying to make now is these people on the left telling you, stick this thing in your arm. They're the ones that destroyed credibility of public health because they gave exact opposite messages before when Trump was in office, showing you the message was not principled but was political. Here's the receipts right here. Watch this video. Believe nothing these public health people tell you. They're telling you now, take the jab. They were the same people telling you, don't take the jab before. Why? Because it's all politics with them all the time. Receipts incoming. Check this out.
So let's just say there's a vaccine that is approved and even distributed before the election. Would you get it?
Well, I think that's going to be an issue for all of us.
If and when the vaccine comes, and it's not likely to go through all the tests that need to be and the trials that are needed to be done. When we finally do, God willing, get a vaccine, who's going to take the shot? Who's going to take the shot? You can be the first one to say, put me, sign me up. They now say it's okay. And the question of whether it's real when it's there, that requires enormous transparency. You've got to make all of it available to other experts across the nation so they can look and see. So there's consensus this is a safe vaccine.
If the president announced tomorrow we have a vaccine, would you take it? Only if it was completely transparent that other experts in the country could look at it. Only if we knew all of what went into it.
If Donald Trump can't give answers and the administration can't give answers to these three questions, the American people should not have confidence.
But if Donald Trump tells us that we should take it, I'm not taking it.
Folks, understand the point I'm trying to make here. This has nothing to do with pro or anti-vax, although I addressed that when I opened up the segment. The public health infrastructure, the FBI, the military, and elsewhere, the upper levels of the military, faith in institutions is collapsing left and right. Why is faith in the public health operation totally collapsed? Because they say things based not on science, but pure politics. The same idiots telling you to jam this thing in your arm now were the same exact people telling you before, I don't know, you better be careful about that thing. None of this had anything to do with anything other than pure, ruthless politics. That was a clip from the Dan Bongino Show. You can watch the full show. We recommend you do on Rumble. Go to rumble.com/Bongino, please, and subscribe for free. We appreciate it.
I go to the mall and hide in a stairwell and take photos of women's skirts. I have a whole book of cooter shots under my bed.
One time I put a firefly in my butthole.
Why?
To make my farts glow.
Oh, God.
I had a beer with the old biker man at the end of the street, and he let me touch his old lady's.
Oh, God. I shaved the dog and glued the hair to my nutsack so I look like a grown man.
I touched myself to Drew Carey on The Price is Right.
God. Okay, that's enough. Stop, please.
What's up, guys? Boy Benny. So the source of all enlightenment is understanding that your government lies to you, and that it is an organized criminal enterprise. They lie to you about every major event and about some of the biggest events in human history, and a black box event that you're not allowed to ask questions about. In fact, if you're the most popular guy on all TV, you'll get fired for asking the wrong questions about January 6th, remains a black box. And while we have a lot of January 6th footage, an enormous amount of information about that day remains curiously missing. Now, there is some footage, however, that isn't missing and is quite confusing to those of us who are simply watching from afar. Here's footage of a violent protester getting released from his handcuffs. What's this about? By the officers there on the Capitol that day. Not only that, he fist bumps the officers who fist bump him back as though they know each other. And the officers let him out of his shackles, this violent, angry, dangerous insurrectionist, and they let him go. After saying, what's up? After saying, how you doing? After high-fiving the guy. And now the officers talk to each other. What does this mean? Well, either these two officers are totally derelict in their duty, protecting the Capitol that day, releasing a violent protester back onto the street, even when they had him in shackles. Or this man was a paid operational asset agitator from the federal government, arrested without understanding his credentials, and then when he told them that he worked for the FBI or the intelligence agencies, they let him go. They checked that through the walkie-talkie. Oh, yep, got it. We got John here from the FBI. This has just simply been speculation for us until now. When a former FBI agent, current CIA officer, in undercover recordings explains that there were at least 20 undercover FBI agents at the Capitol on January 6th, saying effectively that they can arrest anybody that they wish, and that they set up right-wing journalists like Tucker and Alex Jones for jail. My God, ladies and gentlemen, we can put anybody in jail, set them up. We call it a nudge. Okay, what the hell is this? This is an investigation from a group called Sound Investigations. Here's their handle. Sound Investigations came up with this recording, and we'll play it for you in just one moment. Some of the takeaways here are the CIA officer boasts we can put anybody in jail. FBI, we did what we wanted with Alex Jones, took his money away, chopped his legs off. Estimates 20 undercover agents on January 6th, works with them now, the CIA. Yeah, we're all friends. FBI used embellished news and fake social media stories to get people mad and to get Tucker Carlson fired. My heavens, ladies and gentlemen. Alex Jones has responded to this, by the way. I think this is very important to say up front, and then we'll play the clips. Breaking bombshell, FBI CIA deep state manager confirms FBI agents were in the crowd on January 6th, confessed that three-letter government agencies were targeting Alex Jones to silence him. More info soon. Elon Musk call for a congressional investigation, please, ASAP. Elon Musk has responded, saying this is disturbing, and I hope Alex Jones sues the hell out of the FBI, right? I mean, it certainly seems like it would be exculpatory evidence. Let's have a listen, ladies and gentlemen, to Gavin O'Blenis, contracting officer for the CIA.
Oblenis is a contracting officer at the CIA. Oblenis worked for the FBI in 2021 and 2022 in the San Diego office, moved on to Homeland Security where he conducted asylum interviews at the southern border, and now works for the CIA managing multi-million dollar contracts across government agencies and private sector vendors.
I work for I'm not supposed to tell people kind of job.
I say intelligence, what do you think?
CIA?
Yep.
You work for the CIA?
I do.
That's incredible.
I'm a contracting officer.
That's amazing.
So I deal a lot with, like, different agencies. We're contracting with, like, Director of National Intelligence to do stuff. We do Navy, Army, any of them, really. I just, FBI. I used to work for the FBI, so
really?
They threw the FBI at me. They're like, here, you used to work there. Oh, I'm permanent.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, why do they call it contracting?
Because I do the contracting for them. I do all the legal contracts. I fly out to vendors and evaluate them. I love the agency.
Good for you.
I like the Bureau, too. The Bureau was a lot of fun. I got to do a lot of cool stuff with the Bureau.
A lot of cool stuff. Clearly, really good at his job, this guy. The smartest G-men. Only the smartest spies, ladies and gentlemen. So, what does he say about January 6th? I guess this is the leading headline here, although there's a lot in this interview, and we encourage you, of course, to go watch it for yourself. But here is what the man says about January 6th, of which he was directly involved.
Finally, Oblenis states that he knows and works with FBI agents who were undercover in the January 6th Capitol riot, estimating about 20 field agents were there undercover. While Oblenis notes that they were not involved in violence, this appears to be the first admission of undercover FBI agents in attendance.
I thought you said that there were FBI agents in the crowd at J6.
There always are when there's a big protest in D.C. Just in case it gets out of hand like this.
There wasn't
enough to turn that guy. I mean, I'm talking they maybe have 20. You needed 1,000 to get rid of that crowd.
So they had like, just 20?
Yeah, just to go through to there and see what I can hear, you know, that kind of thing.
Wow. Definitely. They needed 1,000 at least.
Well, wow. That's also Capitol Police jurisdiction. They're in charge.
So the FBI,
why they didn't have more on hand, I don't know.
The Bureau didn't really want people knowing that they were in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would be overstepping their bounds.
A little bit.
Do people know that?
Why?
Did people know that the Bureau was in the crowd?
Nope, and probably never will.
Do you know agents that were there?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, they work for the agency now.
They work with me now! Will people know that law enforcement were in the crowd and were encouraging people to behave violently? Yeah, we actually do know that. We know that because we have the undercover body camera footage. Now, this isn't from the FBI. The FBI has yet to admit that there were undercover agents in the crowd, although we've been sort of assuming this for quite a while. This is the undercover body camera footage from undercover police officers who were live-action role-playing as MAGA supporters encouraging people to behave violently. The context here is that these are officers undercover. They got their badges. They work for the government. And because everybody in Washington, D.C. works for the government, so these are government agents here, and they are saying and encouraging people to not only go into a area that they're not allowed to, they're encouraging people to, like, climb the scaffolding, you can see in this footage, and to be charged with a specific charge that virtually every single J6er gets, which is you were there to disrupt an official proceeding. And you were there in a space. You're violating, obviously, trespassing at the United States Capitol. Here, you can see the officers
swamp.
Literally encouraging.
Drain the swamp. Drain the swamp. Go, go.
Let's go.
Go, go. Go, go.
Help him up. Help him
up.
Up. Help him up.
Yep.
Hold on, wait. Push him
wait,
up. Push him up.
Wow. So, turns out all the people who've been saying that they were a bunch of federal agents in the crowd were really, really right. What else have we been really right about? Well, again, as we've pointed out, Alex Jones is one of those guys who has always been a thorn in the side of the intelligence community and has been for decades now. But Alex Jones is somebody who, according to this man, Gavin Oblenis, was set up by the CIA and the FBI. Have a listen.
So with Alex Jones, you were watching him long before anything ended up happening.
Probably. It wasn't my office, but, I mean, we would have been well aware of what he was doing.
And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much. And we let the families do it.
And the, what?
We let the families do it.
Were they encouraged to do that by the Bureau? Like, nudged?
We don't encourage people.
But, like,
we just say there's no federal statute being broken. But you do have the option for a civil case. And it's a pretty good case.
Nice.
In our opinion.
So, that makes so much sense. I have a cousin who's a lawyer. So that's a lot of these cases. They're kind of encouraged by the FBI?
Yeah, like, there's nothing federal law we can do. But civilly, we can go at them that way.
And they did?
Yeah.
So the FBI was happy?
We didn't care. We were like, oh.
Basically, the citizens did your job.
Yeah.
Wow, so you can encourage a civil lawsuit.
Not encourage. Educate.
What can you do with people like Alex Jones now? Is he still out there?
Yeah.
He's still chirping.
He can chirp.
Are you still watching him?
Yeah.
Why?
He did what we wanted.
Which was what?
He took his money away. We shut him up for a while. You're never going to shut him up for anything.
How, well, unless you put him in prison.
But again, he didn't do anything to go to prison. Being ignorant is not a crime, though it should be.
It is. I mean, what? You could bring a nudge.
He didn't incite a riot like Cheeto. He didn't encourage people to go shoot people. He didn't. So he didn't do anything.
Cheeto. Of course, talking about Donald Trump, Orange Man. Literally, Orange Man bad. It's not a meme. It's real. These are the kind of psychotic nihilists who run your federal government. Look at this man, how proud he is that they were able to bankrupt Alex Jones. They were bankrupting Alex Jones. Look at the expression on the face. And they, according to this current CIA officer, former FBI, coordinated with the family. The families, Sandy Hook is who he's talking about, the Sandy Hook families, and they coordinated with them and encouraged them to sue Alex Jones in order to bankrupt him, which, of course, they did. I think they got billions of dollars in settlement. So this is the federal government coordinating to shut up journalists and to silence free speech. It is shocking. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, people are saying that Alex Jones should sue the hell out of the FBI. What else do they know? Who was in that meeting? Sure, it'd be interesting to find out, but that's not all we found out in this interview. Have a listen.
I don't know, like, I don't even know these names, like a Fox News person or like a Tucker Carlson or like.
I'm sure he does. Right. You always want the biggest and loudest. Like that, what was his name? The one that said the Sandy Hook didn't happen.
So, Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
You are? Hardcore. Are you still after him? Why?
Because he's broke. He got found guilty and had to pay like $100 million.
So what? Why were you after him?
We're not anymore.
Just to get the money from him?
Yeah.
Was that court case used? Was that a CIA?
Sure was.
That was the agency thing?
Well, actually it was a defamation case. So it's a civil, not government. But we were looking at all of his followers, commenting, following, like, who's that going to be this time? Right? So even though it's technically not our, well, not the agency, definitely, but the Bureau, for instance, yeah, it's not our purview. It's a civil matter. But since they got all this access to his stuff, and it's there, what can we go find?
And did you find it?
I can't tell you.
Oh,
we did. But, so, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, realize the opportunity that you have.
So they're going after Alex Jones's followers, the people who are liking and speaking to Alex Jones. They're targeting Americans who've broken no laws, who've engaged in no violence or criminal behavior. They're going after you for viewpoint discrimination because you are supporting creators or people that the government doesn't want you to support, people who question the government. Still think you live in a free country? Bragging about how the agencies and others sued Alex Jones for defamation, bankrupting him. That was the brag. Really makes you wonder. There have been members of Congress who've come on our show and others who have said, I know for a fact, I have footage of uniformed FBI agents going into the bathroom inside the Capitol before it was breached and coming out dressed as MAGA supporters. Clay Higgins has been, and Clay Higgins, of course, is a member of Congress from Louisiana, but he has a background in law enforcement, and so he's been able to sniff out this rat for a long time.
Yeah, I was not only involved in the actions on January 6th from within, they had, I suspect, over 200 agents embedded within the crowd, including agents, or as they would call human assets, inside the Capitol dressed as Trump supporters before the doors were opened. Beyond that, the FBI had embedded themselves and infiltrated online chat groups and websites and social media accounts across the country with any group that was discussing objections to COVID oppression.
So this member of Congress in 45 seconds explained how the FBI had effectively integrated entirely January 6th. We still don't know what their actual operations were during the Capitol, or which individual in those in these mysterious videos, which one of them was working for the FBI, who was working for the FBI. Was the people getting fist bumped? We don't know. Curious footage about January 6th out there, but there is, of course, other footage that shows you exactly what these people are capable of. Tucker Carlson, in bombshell reporting, saying that CIA, his own CIA sources, I don't think it's the same one, since that guy said that he's Tucker's on a list, but the same CIA source said that they had a hand in JFK's assassination. They were the ones who ran CIA's assassination, John F. Kennedy. It really makes you wonder, like, if they're lying about that, what else are they going to be lying about? Ron Paul saying it was a coup. It was a coup staged against Democrats by the intelligence agency.
And I say it was concrete that there was a coup and we lost our government. It was November 22nd.
Yes.
The assassination of Kennedy.
That was 60 years ago. Yeah. And our lawmakers never talk about it.
But you mentioned to me earlier and brought back in memory, but do you know who they appointed to the commission? Alan Dulles.
He was on the Warren Commission.
Yeah.
So the guy who was responsible for the murder.
He probably was the most.
Was investigating the murder.
That's what dawned on me. The Republic is gone. That's when I said the day is in it.
The Republic is gone. Your government is lying to you and has been lying to you and continues to lie to you. And the famous Alexander Solzhenitsyn quote, they know they're lying, we know they're lying, they know we know they're lying, and they continue to lie. CIA FBI employee says 20 undercover agents at J6 boast about taking away Alex Jones's money and says that Tucker Carlson is being targeted. May not be news to you, but it still remains shocking to hear it in real time and from the horse's mouth. Really unbelievable stuff here, ladies and gentlemen. I encourage you to go and to see for yourself, to watch the interview, and also to ask yourself, do you live in a free country? The most empirical question of all, do you live in a free country? We on the show are trying to make it free and doing our level-headed best every single day. David and Goliath story, that is for sure. That's how dragons get slain. It's your boy Benny. Like, share, and subscribe. See ya. What's up, guys? Boy, Benny. AOC is a very easy person to mock. All you have to do is put a helmet on her and let her go.
What is the crime, sir?
You
specifically.
You keep up. You ask me the answer.
RICO is not a crime. It is a category.
It's a category of crime.
This is from the Joe Biden impeachment hearing from just the other day. And while that may be funny for all of us watching from afar, it's not really funny for the people in Astoria, New York, part of the Bronx that AOC represents. Now, of course, she's not from there. She didn't grow up there. She didn't live there. She doesn't speak Spanish. She's not really like she's a total carpetbagger, right, that moved in from the rich and leafy suburbs of upstate New York to play it quite literally as an actress. She went to an audition to run for Congress to play the part of a Marxist in Congress, play the part of a socialist. However, just like you would assume, people who are welcoming in criminal aliens into their district, who are welcoming the lack of policing, defund the police, the lack of any type of outside investment. You remember AOC famously killed a massive Amazon distribution center that would have brought 50,000 jobs to her suffering and impoverished district. You got to assume that AOC, just dumb, but also doesn't care about the lives of the people in her district. Meanwhile, AOC is getting rich, going to the Met Ball and everything like that with her weird boyfriend-husband situation. And, expect her to get called out from some pretty angry New Yorkers like Kevin O'Leary. Shark Tank's Kevin O'Leary shreds AOC over her district looking like the third world, as it does.
AOC, what an incredibly successful politician she is, and what a horrific manager she is. Her jurisdiction looks like a third world country, and yet she's great at social media and making outrageous statements and getting $5 at a time on, you know, every way she can on social. Good for her. But wow, look what she did when Amazon came knocking for 10,000
jobs. Yeah, that
jobs.
Blew my mind. How does that you survive?
So election? Why would you want to reward that? Why wouldn't you say, excuse me, could I get better management, please? I live here, pay taxes here, and I'd like a job. And I don't think you're doing a great job for me as a manager. How about I hire somebody else? That's what I would encourage. Not that she isn't just great as a politician. There are countries that have weak leaders. There are states that have bad governors. I think people, the great thing about democracy is say, we can do better.
Right.
Putting up my head, let's do better.
You think as you talk, I get this, it's not personal, it's just business.
Just business.
But everything is personal now.
No, not for me.
I mean, what you did right there is you gave her a compliment in terms of her showmanship and how she does well on social media, and she used her platform, and then you criticized the deed. You're like,
she's
you lost.
Manager.
Yeah, you're not. And that should
which,
be, but
which
that
one
makes
is
you
it?
There's a lot of words I could throw, and I agree with you. I'll say it with you. I'll say it. I don't. I'm like, who voted for this? And you can see across the board. You can see it doesn't have to be AOC. You can take it at
a
Republican guy.
Example.
Yeah, but she's a perfect example who cares about the camera.
Wasn't true. Is she a
nothing?
She's a great politician. Let's celebrate that. Is she a bad manager? 100%. She's terrible. They're both true. They
so
can
if
both
she was a business,
I wouldn't.
Would you pass? Shark Tank.
Let me be specific.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let her manage a candy store.
Wow.
But Kevin O'Leary has bought from AOC. Kevin O'Leary went and purchased a sweater that said tax the rich, eat the rich from AOC's store for $70.
Check this out. I look spectacular in this. I was walking on the beach earlier today, right out there. See that? Everybody wants to buy this off me. I got this from the official AOC site. Now let's talk about gross margins. Check this out. Yep, official AOC shop. I paid $67.22 for this. I'm going to guess she lands this or, you know, basically for, I don't know, $6. It's fleecewear and $5 for shipping. That's 85% gross margin. That's spectacular. Listen, you know what this proves? Inside of every socialist, there's a capitalist screaming to get out. AOC, call me. We could blow this thing up together. We could make a fortune. I only want 7% royalty. That's being reasonable. Call me.
So it's gone from like jokes like that to Kevin O'Leary saying he's going to move all of his businesses out of the state. He says that New York is a loser state. California is a loser state. I'll never invest in New York. And I'm not the only person saying that. He's moving all of his businesses to Tennessee and to Florida, where they have competitive tax rates and good policies. Kevin O'Leary also saying that New York is potentially threatening the future of America by going after Donald Trump, because the core of America, I mean, the whole reason why there were colonies started here in the first place, was the promise of the protections of your property rights. It's amazing how much property rights separates us from the third world. The fact that a government cannot just go and steal everything that you are making, creating, investing in. Kevin O'Leary did this on CNN the other day, and we thought this was really quite interesting. The CNN hosts legitimately left gasping after Kevin O'Leary eviscerates the charges against Donald Trump in New York.
I don't think this case is about Trump anymore. I think this case is about New York. It's about the American brand. It's about what we promised the world in terms of fairness and justice and investing capital in a country that's built the largest economy on earth. Forfeiture, seizing of assets, is that in our nomenclature in America? Is that what we tell people that want to bring their money here and protect property rights? Forget about Trump. Nothing to do with Trump. You think this is good for business in New York? You think this is good for business in America? To take a law that we use to protect people against buying refrigerators at an overpriced value decades ago and apply it against an individual and then talk about seizing assets like he was in Venezuela or in Cuba? This is very, very, very bad look for New York. And everybody around the world is watching this. This may be great for this Attorney General, but this is not good for America.
But in terms of valuation, can you be clear as to why? I mean, why would the properties not be sufficient collateral?
What a great message to send out all around the world. Claim where there was no monies lost. There was no fraud here in the context of actually people losing money. Deutsche Bank, who made the loan, was made whole. And let's make a penalty of $500 million against a crime, apparently, where no monies were lost. Great message for New York. Great message for America. Bring your capital because we'll protect your property. I think that was a statement that would be much better made sometime in Venezuela. I'm not kidding. That's a scary, scary message. And by the way, there are no such thing as half a billion dollar bonds. There are no $500 million bonds. Never been done before. Never. This law has never been applied. Forget about Trump. Nothing to do with Trump. Everything to do about America and the New York brand.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, a younger and much fatter version of me once went to Astoria, New York to investigate AOC's district myself and to find out if the lovely people of Astoria needed or wanted any communism or socialism in their representation. And the answers shocked me.
Venezuela?
Venezuela? No, don't get me started with Venezuela. Oh, no. Chico, no.
Hey, everyone. How you doing? Benny Johnson with Turning Point inside of the beautiful, magnificent, glorious 14th Congressional District of New York. Happens to also be the home district of America's favorite socialist, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. We are here to find out tonight if people inside of this district actually believe in socialism.
They're already laughing at me. These guys, they're already cracking up. What do they think about socialism?
We're going to find out today inside of AOC's district.
Just one question about socialism? I'll give you the question ahead of time. So easy. So easy. No wrong answer.
There is a wrong answer. Socialism sucks.
I don't think so.
I was born in a socialist country, and I came to this country to get away from socialism.
Socialism is the worst. It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
I like capitalism. I like the fact that I earn my bucks, and I spend them on moi, which I'm going to now.
Look, this is beautiful. Look at it. Absolutely ravishing. Ravishing.
What do you think about socialism?
It's like...
I don't agree with socialism. Socialism is supposed to be like where everybody gets the same amount. I want to do better than people. If I work harder and stuff like that, that's why.
Show me the money!
If you give everything, if you give everybody anything, they could just stay home, and then what's the point? What's the drive? And that's why socialism is not right for America.
All socialism does is just encourages people just to sit back and do nothing.
I think I'd make everyone relax a little bit more.
Eventually, it's going to go broke. You know, how you going to pay for free stuff?
Am I taking you against socialism? Why is that?
I'm against freeloaders. Yeah. You got to work. You got to earn it.
What do they actually mean by that?
I work because I choose to. I give to my church, again, because I choose to. Nobody tells me what to do.
You see, just say that in the camera. Oh, come on. Look at this, capitalism right here, right here in the street. Right here in the street. I'm messing up this capitalism. We just witnessed capitalism taking place in the street in AOC's district. It's sickening. I can't believe she hasn't shut this down yet. This is why you're hustling right now. I can see you're grinding. Look at this. Are you chef?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Here at this restaurant?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Start your own restaurant someday?
Of course.
Yeah?
You see these? I quit. I opened my own hotel.
It says that you should pay people who are unwilling to work.
Should pay people?
We should all pitch
mean,
in.
Oh, you mean freeload?
Yeah, we have plenty of freeloaders in society today.
They think that they can just print money and it'll solve the problem. It doesn't work that way.
And everyone deserves equal protection and prosperity.
Came to this country to get away from socialism.
That's a powerful story. Do you mind telling me which one or no?
Yugoslavia.
Not good. Under the Soviet bloc?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah?
Sort of, yeah.
Did it suck?
Yes, it did.
And does America awesome?
I think it is, yes.
That's all you need right there.
America!
Socialism. It does not bring joy to people.
No, it does not. It does not. I mean, seriously, folks? No, nor does communism.
What's your message to an American socialist, to AOC? What's your message?
If you love it so much, go to all these other countries that have socialism.
Look what happened.
See how it went. Look at what happened to Venezuela.
It is time that we pay people what they are worth and not how little they are desperate enough to accept.
Venezuela?
Venezuela? No, don't get me started with Venezuela. Oh, no, 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 no. Chico, no. That is so not good.
These kids with their capitalist AirPods, I'm talking to them. Hey, you want to talk about socialism? They don't even hear me because of capitalism. This AOC's district, there's so much capitalism in people's ears, they can't even hear my question. What do you think about socialism?
I love it.
You love socialism? Can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
How much do you pay for those glasses?
It was Armani almost 20 years ago.
Where did you get those eyeglass frames?
I can't tell you that.
So you don't know where you got them?
Yes, I do. Uh-huh. But I don't want anyone else to have them.
Well, that's peculiar.
That is a socialist lifestyle right there. Drive away in a Mercedes 300 class in your Armani glasses, custom Armani glasses. That is proper socialism right there. It's an easy question. Do you like socialism or no? No? Can we get your beautiful dog in the video at least? Oh, look at his beautiful. Oh, my gosh. Look at that. No dogs like that in socialism because they're eating them. AOC, you got problems. I'm telling you, we talked to like a dozen people. No, a single person really likes socialism. The only person that said something nice about socialism was a guy driving a Mercedes 300 class with Armani glasses on.
Mm. And I might run for mayor, and who knows?
The next AOC, a capitalist. So if you love your city, if you love the beautiful 14th district here in New York, which we are in right now, smack dab in the heart of AOC's district, I'll tell you this, you don't want to be socialist. Even if...
Today, right-wing conspiracy extremist Alex Jones led supporters in a Stop the Steal rally at the state capitol.
Magnificent.
I'm sorry. I thought we had a shot. There's just too many of...
There are more of us.
Where did they get all these fighter craft? They have no navy.
It's not a navy, sir. It's just people.
Spice runner.
You made it!
Alex, thank you so much for taking the time to
be with us today. We know that this was supposed to be a time of peace for you, but I guess there's no peace in war, right? And apparently the intel agencies have said they are at war with you. Your response?
Well, we've known this for really 7 years, and they even had congressional hearings 6 years ago admitting that they had designated myself and Trump as Russian agents with no proof. They had armed services committees in the House where they called us disinformation agents and admitted that Obama put forward $2+ billion in the Defense Authorization Act, the last thing he signed in 2017 in January, set up the Countering Foreign Disinformation Propaganda Act that then tied in to the repeals a few years before by Obama of the laws that bar the CIA from engaging in domestic propaganda or targeting the American people. So I'm on record, even before I was sued and had default judgments in rigged trials where the judges found me guilty and the juries found out how guilty I was. That was their only decision to make. I've said hundreds of times that it was the CIA and the FBI, and it would take an hour to go through it all, but Senator Blumenthal's office works in Connecticut through a law firm that his family works at, through a former federal prosecutor who actually got the governor arrested, basically set him up for nothing in Connecticut. His specialty is getting Republicans arrested. I was then sued as part of the Sandy Hook lawsuit in Connecticut by an FBI agent, never said his name, never showed his picture. None of my reporters ever did. I first learned his name when he sued me. He said he got one phone call asking if Sandy Hook was real like 9 years ago. And so he got $94 million for that. And my lawyer asked him on the stand, he said, has Mr. Jones ever said your name? He said, no. Has any of his crew? No. Has he ever been on your website? No. And the reason I list that is we knew these players were involved, and we knew the feds were being given the 3 years of discovery. So they kept wanting more and more and more discovery. And then the judges said, you've given us no discovery. We're defaulting you. And now we're going to have a trial on the damages. And just to be clear, I knew it was the government day one because I barely ever covered Sandy Hook. Didn't say any of the things they said I said, even though it would have been my right. Never went to Connecticut. Never told people to go to Connecticut. Never peed on graves. All this was said. I barely covered it back when it happened. And then when Trump won, there were suddenly thousands of news articles in 2016-17, thousands of TV programs, local ones and national ones, hundreds on the national news, every channel, from the late night comics to PBS to CNN to ABC, every channel, sometimes every night. Alex Jones is currently sending people to attack families. Alex Jones won't stop saying that said it didn't happen. I'm like, I said before I got sued I thought it happened. I barely ever covered it. It was a big internet thing. And I said I could see how, as much as we can lie to you, that's the case. So when you see every newspaper attacking you and every TV channel, like it was the invasion of Iraq in 2003, that much propaganda, I knew it was about setting the precedent. I knew the government was involved. Then I saw all the FBI and the feds and people in and around it. Then I was told by a former section chief of the CIA, and I've interviewed a lot of those people and talked to one off record, they get ready to be sued. It's an agency operation. They're running the propaganda. The FBI is implementing it. You're going to be defaulted. They're going to get giant judgments, and they're going to try to shut you down. This is bigger than you. So I knew that a year before I got sued. I said, this is all going to happen now. And so this is just a mid-level guy, though he is a contract manager. He's not a contractor. He manages major contract operations, so he's a boss because he's a leftist. And so when this information came out, and I'm told they're about to release even more on Thursday, I already knew this was the case. I already understood it, just like we have total proof of the feds running the Fed insurrection on January 6th, just like the January 6th committee that was a fraud wasn't even duly put in. The Republicans are supposed to vote for who they want on the committee. They couldn't. They destroyed all the transcripts and videos of the January 6th testimonies, including my testimony to Congress. Can't get that. It's been destroyed. So they had secret hearings. I was there for hours. And you don't get to see that because it's all the evidence of what they did and Nancy Pelosi's daughter and the film crew. And again, these trials in Texas and Connecticut, the judges putting their makeup on, big giant movie cameras, HBO producers. When they had the premiere of this HBO hit piece, The Truth versus Alex Jones, a few weeks ago at South by Southwest, the judge was there on the red carpet with photos and a gown and was at the front and was the guest of honor. It's just a giant, sick operation. So what happened with Sandy Hook is I barely covered it. Years later, they go, how do we demonize Trump? By demonizing Jones, by connecting Jones to Trump and then demonizing Jones. They even bragged about this in major news articles, how they did this. The PR firms, some of the top ones in the world, after they rigged those cases, bragged, oh, this is how we did it. We didn't like Jones. We didn't like Trump. We went and took what he said out of context, blew it up really huge, acted in the present tense like I was doing things I never did, ran all these stories, got him sued, rigged the court cases, wouldn't let us defend ourselves, told him I had hundreds of millions of dollars, that I made money off these people, that was the main thing on my show, it was a blip on the radar screen. And then now we learned that it was a weaponization training grid on myself to get all the agencies and networks and big tech to work together to silence me, to deplatform me, to demonize me. And then once that one domino fell, they'd be able to ban everybody else. Even the Wall Street Journal wrote a huge subscription article years ago, how Alex Jones was destroyed. It's like a 30-page subscription article explaining he's just the first. Now we're going to get everybody. And now we have top Democrat law firms that run this are the same ones suing Trump, the same ones that sued Giuliani, the same law firms. When I'm in these depositions, it is the lawyers from the top Democrat Party law firm in New York and in Houston, and they're there. The same lawyers you see on TV, I'm in the room with those guys. I've been deposed probably 15 times or something by all these different groups, all these different systems coming after me, and just absolutely insane. So I literally have been run over and backed over by the CIA, by the FBI, and I always knew this was the case, but the public would ask me, how are you taking this, Alex? And I'd say, I'm taking it okay, but understand, they're trying to get through me to get to you, like Trump always says. So I warned them over and over again that just like Loris Lerner and the IRS going after tens of thousands of conservatives and Christians and churches under Obama, they've now moved on to this even bigger operation. And so they staged January 6th. They stole the 2020 election. They tried to steal 2022 completely. They're already rigging things in cyberspace. They're already blocking news. They're already sending out the mail-out ballots. They've already got the bird flu all hyped up and ready, and they're going to try to run the exact same playbook again. But now that this has come out, this is a FBI agent, a CIA boss. He's a contract manager over large contract operations. That's a boss. That's like a mini section chief saying all of this and admitting all of this like it's no big deal. He needs to be subpoenaed by Congress. I am planning to launch a lawsuit against the CIA and the FBI. We have to bring all this out. And right as my bankruptcy comes to a close and right as all this stuff's being finalized, it's really God working here that this came out at this time. And now just the rumblings of this in the last few weeks since they got this footage triggered other groups to go, oh, hey, in our big investigations, we've scooped up similar stuff. And so I've been contacted by some major groups that are set next week to release even more bidding. So the chickens are coming home to roost. The blowback is here, and God is with us, so who can be against us? And the deep state is very, very desperate. But this is KGB garbage. We need congressional investigations. We need the funding to be cut off. There's special units in D.C. and Southern District of New York that are doing all this, giving the FBI a bad name. And I believe the agency needs to be abolished, so does the CIA, just as Kennedy and others did, just as Eisenhower did, just as Harry Truman did. But we can start with the special units in D.C. and the special units in the Southern District of New York. It was the D.C. unit that went over and ran the fake Whitmer kidnapping, where 18 of the 21 kidnappers were feds commanding it and leading it and trying to bully folks into it. It's the same story. And here he is saying, we can put anybody in jail. We know how to go find mentally ill people and manipulate them into committing crimes and lighten the fuse. And it's a clear and present danger with the FBI being ordered by the political DOJ to say the number one threat in America is Trump supporters and gun owners and conservatives. They're really trying to sell the narrative and outlaw the largest political bloc of this country that are good, hardworking people. And they're on the wrong side of history. I don't want a war with the government. I don't like having to take these crooks on. But it's a clear and present danger to everybody, and it's something I've got to do. It's better to die on your feet than live on your knees. But history's shown people that live on their feet, they live a lot longer and are freer than people that live on their knees and end up being slaves or killed. Living on your knees is what gets your ass killed, and I'm not living on my knees. This is going viral. Elon Musk has responded. He wants an investigation. He's calling it very disturbing. We know he's their new big target along with Trump. And so the harder they hit Musk, the harder he hits back. So the globalists are making enemies a lot faster than we are. Liberty's incredibly popular everywhere. I've been on a week and a half vacation. I only take one a year. you know, that's over a week long, and I am in a very nice place in America. I'm in the U.S.'s 50th state, and I have literally shook over 1,000 hands, the bellhops, the people that work here, the military, the police, every person at the pool, every bartender. Even TMZ said, yeah, people were walking up, shaking his hand, saying, dude, you know, good job. I mean, I could walk out right now to the restaurant bar down there and just stand there, and I'd have 30 people lined up with autographs and photos, and it's not about me. But people hate the deep state and know it's bad so much that when they see me being demonized everywhere, it had the opposite effect of only making us stronger. And now Elon Musk is 50 times bigger than Alex Jones. Tucker Carlson is 5 times bigger than Alex Jones. Joe Rogan's like 5 times bigger than Alex Jones. And they all sound just like me. Not because they're following what I say or following what I do, though they did contact me this morning. Tucker's supposed to call back. They have already lived it themselves. They don't need to be told by Alex Jones what's happening. They are experiencing, and so are the American people. But then folks go back to things I said 30 years ago. 30 years I'm on air next week. 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and it's all word for word what happened because I had their battle plan back then. And my uncle was a war hero in Vietnam, helicopter pilot, secret operations before he became Christian, narcotics trafficking for the CIA. He got recruited to be one of the main guys in Iran-Contra, building airfields everywhere. He told me this over a decade ago before he died. He saw the government smuggling kidnapped kids out of Guatemala, and he said, that's it, I'm done. He'd since become a Christian, got out of it. They even killed some of the guys that worked for him after he left. And so my uncle told me all about this stuff, and that's another reason I knew this stuff. He started telling me stuff when he got out in the late 80s when I was just, you know, 12 years old or so. But as I got to be really good friends with him over the years, spent a lot of time with him because I lived on a family ranch that I visit all the time. He basically off record told me a lot. And he wasn't proud of the stuff he did. He believed it was for America. They said, we've got to be more evil than the bad guys. We've got to do all this bad stuff because we're going to control those zones. And that's how they sell people on doing this. So I knew from him. I also knew from my dad's uncle, who before they even called it Delta Force, was an Army officer. And just like in the movie Apocalypse Now, where they call the captain in to go kill Colonel Kurtz, that's how it works. The biggest hitman army in America, at least back when it was HUMED, was Army officers, and he was an Army officer whose job was going around killing people in the U.S., mafia people, other folks that the government wanted to deal with. So before he died, he told me a lot, he told my dad a lot. And so that's how I've not been naive for a long, long time. And now they're taking this thing they used against the Russians and foreign mafias, and they're trying to use it against the American people, and it's totally and absolutely completely illegal. The good news is I've met with high-level federal judges, high-level federal officers who are compartmentalized on the border and with human trafficking who are super pissed. They know the top of the FBI is controlled. They know the top of the CIA is controlled. And so I got to say, I would say 50% or more of these federal agents, or probably even higher when it comes to federal marshals, are awake and on our side. The Border Patrol, like 95%. But they're compartmentalized. They're only allowed to go do bank robberies and kidnappings. And when they catch a 4-time convicted child molester in one case the federal judge gave me that was public to look into, they found him a 5th time driving a school bus in South Texas for disabled kids and abusing them. And when they went to Merrick Garland and the attorney general and said, we want to prosecute, they have a federal law where Garland blocks them prosecuting armed robbers, arsonists, rapists, murderers, smugglers, and over again ordering them released. So as Nancy Pelosi said, MS-13 is all God's children. So I'm going to be clear that the federal government's not our enemy. It's been hijacked by these special criminal Praetorian Guard units. So we need to understand we're entering the time of false flags. We don't want any truck bombs at federal facilities. We don't want any feds being shot. They're not all bad men and women, but at the top, they're about 100% bad. That's why General Flynn was so rare, former head of Defense Intelligence. He'll tell you most of the top generals that are involved in these compartments are very bad. So the top of the Justice Department's bad, the top of the FBI is bad, the top of our military, look at Milley and the rest of them, they're globalists. And so we have an administrative coup, but we need to just understand it's not even our government, it's a hijacked government. That's why you have hijacked federal and state courts saying Trump can't be on the ballot, but the Supreme Court comes in and blocks it. We've still got some pieces on the board at the government level, but we're outnumbered there. But in the grassroots, we have the vast majority of people, and freedom is explosive, Benny. People that are private, which is a great thing to be, don't know how popular freedom is because people don't recognize you. Folks, Tucker Carlson can't walk down the street. Joe Rogan can't walk down the street. I can't walk down the street. Cars pull over. People jump out of their cars. And it's not about us. It's about they resonate with the truth. And the sleeping giant has been awakened, my friends. And all the top talk shows now are into freedom, are into fighting the New World Order. Everybody from you know, even Russell Brand and Jimmy Dore. I mean, who isn't joining us now? Because it's not just a bandwagon. People are not naive. They understand it. And so this now coming out with this, you know, senior contract manager managing major contracts, major cutout groups, because most people in the CIA aren't actually agents like him. They have groups under them for plausible deniability. To have him come spill his guts like this with arrogance is perfect for Congress. Now we can drag his ass in front of Congress and really bring out what's going on, because this globalist coup over America is already in place. Exposing it is how we peacefully remove it.
So, Alex, I have no doubt that you saw this coming from 1,000 yards away and were able to point right to it. However, it's still bone-chilling to see the empirical, demonstrable, on-video evidence of the CIA saying they targeted you, and then they targeted your followers, and they went after people that you knew and associates, and that they were there. I guess he was at the FBI when he was speaking at the time, but they were there in order to confirm that you went down. And they engaged in an operation to take you down. And I guess you just said you were planning on suing the federal government. What would a Alex Jones versus the U.S. government look like?
Well, I'm talking to different law firms right now that specialize in this. In fact, when I get off the feed with you, I'm going to get back on the phone with the lawyers. It's obviously a civil rights violation. It's a government racketeering operation using cutouts. And look, I mean, they come after my mother, my father, my wife. In these mediations, they said, listen, just come out against the Second Amendment and we'll drop all this. I mean, they've done that repeatedly. They've even said, listen, we're a mafia and there's nothing you can do to stop us, to my face, in front of my lawyer, in front of Norm Pass. So they're very arrogant. I mean, these are the sellouts. These are the traitors. These are the people that really love being under the corrupt FBI's wings, under the CIA's wings. They get a thrill. They get to go out and persecute fellow Americans, lie about them, say all these horrible things, and then say you said it, steal your identity, silence you so they can all pile in on you, make movies about themselves with judges and flashbulbs, and, oh, we're so great. We went out and got the big Goliath. No, no, you guys are the Goliath. I'm the David. You misrepresented what I did to make me a monster, and it's backfired. My family, I never considered selling out, but lately they've really been threatening my family and suing them. And my mom and dad, six months ago, every time I see them, they said, we do not want to settle. We do not want to be nice. We are not going to be bullied. We're Americans. We want you to go hardcore. I go, I am hardcore. Well, we want you to. My mother's a big historian, and she's a very mellow Christian lady, but she said, you know what the Spartan women said to their men? And I said, come home with your shields or on them. She goes, that's right. I want you to politically come home with your shield or on it. Do not back down. Do not disgrace our family name. And my wife's the same. We're on. And it's just, it's on. So, look, there's still Americans left. There's still Texans left. And I want the New World Order to know, no matter what you do to me, I'm a better man than you. I'm not a sellout. I'm not connected to child trafficking. 90-plus thousand missing kids under O'Biden. Many of them in sex slavery. Many of them in slave factories. And that's all on you people, not on me. I didn't lie about WMDs in Iraq. I'm not Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State of the Clintons. They worship as a god who on 60 Minutes, they only killed 1 million Iraqis. By then, it was later 3 million with the sanctions. They said 500,000 kids have starved to death the last 3 years from your sanctions. Is that a good price to pay? She goes, yeah, 500,000 is a good price to pay. We do it again. But she's a little lady with a brooch. So when she kills 500,000 people by cutting off their medicine and food, imagine a desert country that lived off oil. Imagine us having no medicine or food for years. And she just laughed at Hillary, came to Libya and saw Libya, and they all died, and they wrecked the Soviets. It's all because they're women. They're liberals. They've got brooches on. So they're allowed to CIA and burn down things and kill people and destroy countries and kill 500,000 children because they're wearing a brooch, or level Gaza because they're wearing a brooch. You know, like the U.S. ambassador that just stepped down, the start of the whole war with Russia in Ukraine. It's sick. It's disgusting. They're bullies. They can't find their fat asses with both hands. And they thought America was intimidated. They thought America was scared of them. No, we were asleep. And now them punching us in the nose and pissing on us has only awakened the sleeping giant. And we're going to peacefully, with the truth, take the country back. And we know you're going to blow up buildings and blame it on us. We know you're going to stage mass shootings. We know you're going to engage in all your new war activity. And the bigger the hole you dig in, the bigger the hole you're putting yourself. just like taking Trump off the ballot. And all this lawfare only boosted him. So this is the immovable object comes into play with the unstoppable force. The most important time in human history in the next 7.5-8 months. And just thank God for the great Benny Johnsons out there who are knocking it out of the park. People can find all our censored material at Infowars.com/show. People follow me on X at Real Alex Jones. And I'm going to be breaking some big news on Friday that I've been holding back on because I wanted to get more pieces. And I'm going to put a whole presentation together how the deep state did this with me. And then I'm told more is going to break next week and other groups are set to break things in the next week to 2 weeks. And it's God. Right at the right time, the cavalry comes over the ridge, and it's an amazing time to be alive.
That's right. It's an amazing time to be alive to see Elon Musk defending Alex Jones. Elon Musk saying this is disturbing in response to the investigation and the specific clip talking about you, responding to you. What do you say to Elon here, most powerful man in the world, arguably one of the richest men in the world, obviously controls an enormous portfolio of American intel operations and Defense Department operations. He has a top-level security clearance, and this guy stands on your side. It's pretty impressive.
Well, Elon understands, though, they can get Trump, they can get him, they can get me, they can get everybody. And he understands he's a target. He says civilization will collapse if they continue to cut off resources and the oil and the fossil fuels. And that if we don't have 2.1 children per person, we're going to go to irrevocable collapse. And just last month, we peaked at 8 plus billion, and now it's going down. Life expectancy is dropping. All the actuaries show we're going to see a collapse of civilization. And so Elon clearly is all in. Either he's an opportunist and sees the globalist collapsing and wants to be the new leader, or he is for Team Humanity and is just going to push them aside and then be the savior. Regardless, he is currently annihilating our enemy. He is currently devastating their operations. So I go Elon Musk all the way. I hope he'll join us on the space this Friday. I'm going to do my show. I hope you'll join us. I'll do one Saturday as well. We got some stuff going on behind the scenes. Looks like that's probably going to be happening very, very soon. Might be on Mario DeFall's program or something. Absolutely. I mean, he's the man in the arena. You can't argue with his actions. You can't argue with the fruit of the tree. And now he's got the communists in Brazil coming after him because they wanted him to ban the opposition party leaders. The State Department advised them a year ago and a half to ban Bolsonaro off the ballot. So our own CIA isn't just overthrowing our government. It's off overthrowing other governments right now. And Elon Musk is fighting the EU censors. He's fighting the communists in Brazil, the Lula dictatorship. Elon Musk is like Godzilla, but he's not attacking Tokyo. He's attacking the capitals of the tyrants, their lies. And so I'm very, very excited about what's happening. And it's just great to be on the right side of history. And it's good to be in the fight, my friend.
So when you say you're going to file a civil rights lawsuit against the government over this, this is something you've clearly talked about. You've retained counsel on this. Would you go on First Amendment grounds that they eliminated your right to free speech, that the right to a free press? And it seems like so much of what you do is, of course, crystallized in the First Amendment first for a reason.
I've been talking to four different law firms, and I'm literally supposed to be on with one of them 5 minutes ago. I will come back with you tomorrow. I'll come back with you today. I love your show. It's huge. But absolutely, I've got to get the wheels on this thing rolling. And we've got a lot of options. But again, if not for me, it's about to put it out in court and show the evidence and then drag them out in the light with discovery and show what they've really done. And it's about congressional hearings, and it's about stopping these rogue agencies that have become domestic KGB operations. And if Elon Musk wants to help me, I know he's been backing a lot of lawsuits out there for freedom. I would love to see the truth came out, because when I told him in that 2.5-hour interview we did 3-4 months ago with Mario DeFall, he said he wanted to hear, the long story. So I told him, I talked like 10 minutes to him the truth about what happened. And the PR firms, he goes, oh, yes, the PR firms, which is the intelligence agency's mouthpieces, and how they did all that, how they created this Alex Jones that didn't exist, and then had a show trial. And then the very same law firm suing me, or that sued me, is the one suing Elon Musk. So that's also a wake-up call for Elon.
Yes. So that does seem everything is interconnected, and every cutout is interconnected.
It's the CIA, who's not supposed to operate domestically, working through PR firms, media, big tech and controls, and works with – you saw it all, weaponization hearings, and through these law firms.
Just really quickly, Tucker Carlson is mentioned here alongside you, saying that Tucker Carlson is on a list, that they're watching him. Can you expound on that? What do you make of that?
Tucker Carlson said 3 years ago, I was just called by a high-level source in the government that the NSA is spying on me and giving my private text messages about going to Russia for a Putin interview to the Washington Post. And a month later, the Washington Post goes, yeah, it's true. We got his text messages, and the CIA gave it to us, and the NSA. Totally illegal. And there's been all sorts of harassment behind the scenes. Of course, he's on a list. I mean, look, here's how the list goes now, okay, of American citizens. He goes, Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and Elon's almost there. Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and then it goes Tucker Carlson, and then it goes Alex Jones, and then it moves down from there. I was just talking to Joe Rogan yesterday. It wasn't a private, I mean, I guess it's a private conversation, I shouldn't say it, but no, I mean, the point is he was like, thank God for Elon because he's taking all the heat for us. I mean, Joe understands that, so do I. Believe it, Elon doesn't want to be the number one target. When he gets attacked, though, he's gonna hit back. So I guarantee you, Elon's happy Trump's out there taking the main brunt. So it's Trump and then Elon that are up there like the Godzillas fighting Megalon or the three, you know, headed dragon. And we're like the military fighting with Godzilla with our missile launchers, you know, shooting at the dragon trying to help Godzilla. So it's like Trump and it's like two Godzillas are out there fighting the globalists. And I'm like an army general. Going, fire the missiles, the three-headed dragon. I mean, the three-headed dragon like zaps into electricity. Our troops are all blowing up. I mean, you think about Godzilla movie. That's basically what this is.
I've never thought about it in kaiju terms. Thank you, Alex. That will create meme content for the rest of all time. So we
well,
thank you.
Well, that's what
you.
I love is they wanted to shut me down. They saw me as the kaiju 7 years ago. But kind of like the camera pulls back, there's this little kaiju. They're like, we defeated this kaiju. And I'm like kind of bloody on the ground, hurt. And then then daddy comes along and pulls back and they're trumping on mud. And they don't know what to do. It's ridiculous. Think of the analogy, like, kaiju looks big as it's zoomed in. You pull back, I've got this little kaiju, and there's big giant ones behind me.
We're going to have to animate it. We're going to have to get the animation going. I will buy a ticket. I will buy a ticket to this.
Hey, Benny, people are hungry for freedom. Please let me come back. I've got to make this meeting. I love you. Infowars.com. Please follow us for Alex Jones. You're badass.
Thank you. Godspeed.
Thank you.
Hey guys, welcome to the Liberal Hive Mind, a channel solely focused on exposing the abundant hypocrisy of the left. The rise of communism in America, it's a very curious phenomenon, to say the least. You know, it seems as though we have a very, very privileged group of young individuals who all seem to fit in the same kind of box, you know, overly privileged, upper middle class to upper class suburban kids with no actual life experience who feel as though they've got it all figured out. But most importantly, I'd argue, people who don't exactly ask too many questions or maybe aren't interested in questions or more interested in confirmation bias, you know, they've convinced themselves that communism is the way, ma equity, everybody deserves the same thing, equal distribution of resources. It sounds nice, it makes you feel good, but of course it doesn't stand up to scrutiny. In fact, it doesn't stand up to the slightest of scrutiny. And you know, I think a lot of these young socialist types, these young communist types, ought to start asking some questions about their own political ideology, but that would probably defeat the purpose of being a young communist revolutionary, because when they do ask questions, well, they get answers that aren't exactly what they're looking for. Let's just say that. There's a clip that's currently bouncing around Twitter that's gone absolutely viral, already raking in over 2 million views, and that's just on the Twitter X platform. Let me show you this hilarious moment. We got some stuff to get into, so let's roll the tape. All right, folks, so I guess we got another one of those questions. How to dismantle communist belief with one single question. Back then, it was, how are you going to pay for it? You know, sounds lovely, but how are you going to pay for it? That tended to pretty much give you a guaranteed W, make whatever communists you're interacting with look like a complete blabbering fool. But now there's a new question, and that question is, can I still have a PS5? In your world of communism, are PlayStation still a thing? Can I still play my video games? Take a look.
Final question to you, Professor Wolf. Under your system of worker cooperatives, would I still get my PlayStation 5?
Absolutely. You'd have to struggle a little bit for it. You'd have to talk to your fellow workers. You'd have to talk about the distribution of income. You'd have to compare your desire for PlayStation against all the other interests of all the other people. It wouldn't be something you worked out on your own with your particular boss. In any way, it would have to be a democratic decision. You'd have to come to terms with that the way you do with democratic decisions now in our society to the extent that we have them.
Not exactly the answer I think leftoids were looking for. You have to be so incredibly naive, frankly, kind of a dummy, to fall for the communist grift. And I mean, the fact that the question even had to be asked, in this beautiful communist utopia, will I still have my PlayStation? No, of course you won't. That's not how communism works. The real way communism works is essentially, you'll own nothing and be happy. Firstly, without capitalism, there is no PlayStations. Without innovation, without technological industry, without market forces and investments, we'd be living in a desolate society. That's the most obvious point. But the second obvious point is that no, you can't have anything in a world of communism, because the state declares what you can and can't have, what you can and can't do, how resources are allocated, where you're allowed to work, where you're going to be, where you can live. You have nothing. You know, leftoids have convinced themselves that communism is this utopic vision of the world where young consumers can just stay at home smoking weed all day, playing video games, while watching Twitch streams and just having everything delivered to them. A government that provides them literally everything. A government will provide you a home, a higher standard of living, video game consoles. They'll give you guaranteed universal income that gives you also discretionary income where you can go and buy all of these fancy things thanks to daddy government. Except the question is, who's going to produce those things? If there aren't market forces, if there aren't transactions, if people aren't being paid for their labor, well, a lot of these industries won't exist. The government will stick to the bare bones necessities like farming wheat and rice, probably spending most of their resources focused on stopping the inevitable. And what's the inevitable, you ask? Well, you know, just a little thing like mass starvation. Without monetary incentive, nothing gets done. If people are simply paid to stay at home all day and to simply exist, to live a life of entitlement, well, not much is going to get done, right? Not many people are going to work grueling hours to become software engineers, doctors, lawyers, you name it, if there's no monetary incentive. In other words, we're going to have a shortage of literally everything unless we're somehow coercing people. No, but what's probably going to end up happening, of course, is the people who do end up putting in more work will rise in society. What does that sound like? Well, basically the same thing you get with capitalism, except in the world of communism, it's only a very select few. You're going to have the haves and the have-nots. Those who are chosen to provide value in society, and those who are simply there to kind of exist, provide labor, and not starve. In other words, all you young leftoids who have developed absolutely no skills and provide no value to society, who are basically at the bottom of the totem pole, well, you're likely to remain there even in this, you know, utopic vision of communism that you keep trying to sell the world. It's crazy how these young people haven't thought these things through. Ooh, capitalism, the root of all evil in society. Meanwhile, the reality is that capitalism has been the strongest force for good, positive change in human history. Starvation has been nearly eliminated. The advancements in technology have increased the standard of living for billions of human beings, and the medical innovations, over the last century or so especially, have probably saved hundreds of millions of people. But capitalism is to be demonized. Why exactly? Well, according to these young leftoids, because capitalism is unfair, there's the haves and then the have-nots. Another idiotic argument. That's not capitalism, that's called human nature. No matter what the system is, there's always going to be the elites, and let's call them the plebeians. The only difference is, in the world of capitalism, anybody can become an elite. We all have the ability to rise up and make something of ourselves and become people of influence. In fact, in the world of capitalism, a ton of people get to rise up that ladder. In the world of communism, however, no, it's just a very select, privileged few who essentially become oligarchs, run all the industry, run everything, and then everybody else becomes a slave. That is the reality. You know, if we were to sum up the interaction, or I guess the question and answer that I played earlier in the clip between these two enlightened individuals, if we were to distill it to its core concept, essentially the way it went was, I'm a lazy millennial who likes staying home all day playing video games and grifting on this whole communism thing because I don't want to work and I just want free crap. Will I still be able to keep my PS5? And the response was, well, if you're important enough, if you're significant enough, if you can make a good enough argument, then yeah, maybe. In other words, only the communist oligarchs and their families, friends, and children will have the privilege to have access to these kinds of things, and everybody else, well, tough luck. I don't see how these young people don't see the errors in their ways. You know, as if communism hasn't been tried a million times before, it's failed every time. But of course, as we know, that's not real communism. No, real communism is the type that exists that gives everybody free crap, makes everybody live the life of a lavish millionaire, and guarantees PlayStation 5s for all. Yeah, sorry to break it to you, young leftoids. That world doesn't exist. That is a stoner, gamer pipe dream. And trust me when I tell you I understand it, because as ashamed as I am to say this, been there, done that. I was that dumb 19-year-old kid just playing video games. I thought I was smart, saying things like computers can just be provided to everybody. That's what Marxism is about. Everybody getting everything for free. Everybody having the same thing, being on an even playing field. But when you think about the logistics, it simply doesn't make sense. Who's going to make these computers? Who's going to mine the resources? How can we possibly create a supply chain and pipeline to give everybody everything in an effective manner without global society essentially turning towards fascism? The only way you can possibly achieve that is by indentured servitude, slavery. You know, the greater good of the state. I hate to break it to you, leftoids, but the only way you're keeping your PS5 in your la-di-da communist pipe dream is on the backs of slaves. Frickin' wake up and smell the coffee. The most recognized communist professor essentially just said the quiet part out loud. Communism sucks. Anyways, that's pretty much what I got for you guys. Hopefully you enjoyed it. If you did, make sure to leave a like and possibly subscribe to the channel. Of course, you know that we'd love to have you here. Thanks for watching, friends, and I will see you on the next one.
What you're seeing on screen here is a bunch of woke liberal students dressed up as clowns in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, just a couple of days ago in order to protest Candace Owens speaking at a Turning Point USA event. So that's what we're going to watch in this video. Candace Owens debating these queer woke clowns. Let's get into it.
Guys, to the people that are dressed up as clowns, you guys can literally come to the front. I'm just going to let them go first, just because I promised them, and then... Thank you.
All right, listen. I have to hold the mic, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Hi.
Okay, who's going first?
Is there still a mask policy here?
Hi.
Pardon? I just want to make sure I can hear you.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, great.
Okay. So you like to learn, right? What did you learn from the Christchurch mosque shooting where 51 people died at the hands of someone who is influenced by you above all other people? How did you change your rhetoric after this person shot 51 people?
Great question. So what she is referencing, one of the craziest media firestorms I've ever been in my life, in New Zealand is what she's talking about. There was a mosque shooting, and 51, I'll take your number for it, people lost their lives. And apparently, and I actually haven't followed up on the story because I've never been to New Zealand. I don't talk about mosques. I don't talk about Muslims. So it would be very weird if this would have anything to do with me. But apparently, they said that there was an online manifesto. I don't even know if that was officially attributed or if that was just early press. But they found a manifesto of this shooter online somewhere. Again, this was alleged early. I don't know if they've since debunked that. And apparently, the person listed Nelson Mandela as his number one inspiration, alongside Spyro the Dragon, which I believe is a child's cartoon, Spyro the Dragon. Maybe it's a video game. I don't know. And Candace Owens. Yeah, you know, I didn't feel like there was a lesson other than people are crazy and we shouldn't give credence to homicidal maniacs when they're putting together cartoons and people that fought against apartheid plus a random American in their thought process. So I learned that that was clearly an ill person and that any person who believed or gave credence to a manifesto should probably reexamine why that is. That's what I learned. Thank you very much for your question. Next. It's the next person. So we have a long line.
My clown, that was a silly question. And Candace Owens, she's not out there inciting violence. I remember this case. This was a long time ago. I actually made a video about it where she debated these two woke liberal white women in Congress about it. People love to take stuff out of context, and at the end of the day, context freaking matters, because when you put out as much content as somebody like Candace Owens puts out, hours and hours every day. It'd be very easy. Like Joe Rogan, it's easy to take a small clip of something, patch it together, and make it look incriminating. Let's get to the next clown.
Famous girl. Famous girl. Sorry, that was so funny. I actually have here, I was talking to someone outside.
Mm-hmm.
It was like one of your merch people. I don't know.
Sorry, could you just be clear? It's a little hard.
I was talking to, ooh, my God.
That's good. No, it's good.
I was talking to one of your merch people or like something outside, and I mentioned that, I don't know if you know this about Pittsburgh. It's a very Jewish population. It's awesome. We have great food.
Pittsburgh. Great. Awesome.
Yeah. Anyways, I don't know if he knows about our school. Yeah, very Jewish.
Great.
So I asked him, I was like, are you sure you want to bring Candace Owens in here? Because if I remembered correctly, and in my, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I might have forgotten. I was like, you did say something about Hitler once that was weird. And he said, do you have a source? And I was like, hold on. So I got a source.
Mm-hmm.
I showed it to him. He was like, that's The Hill. It's a, like a tabloid. I was like, okay, that's fair. I looked it up. My first question is, do you trust Newsweek.com?
Do I trust
Newsweek.com?
You can just get to your question. Let's just pretend that whatever you read was legitimate and just ask the question.
I can actually play your response.
Just ask the question. It's fine. Well, whatever you read is legitimate. I'm not going to like try to debunk. Just tell me what it said and ask the question.
Fine.
Yeah.
It's your words here.
No, okay, but like just ask. Let's just get to your question.
Okay. Here's a preamble. I actually don't have any problems at all with the word nationalism. Okay. I think that the definition gets poisoned by elitists that actually want globalism. Okay. Seems a lot like, you know. Globalism is what I don't want. Whenever we say nationalism, the first thing people think about, at least in America, is Hitler. Okay. You could stop there, but it's okay if Hitler just wanted to make America great and had, oh, my God. Oh, that was a really funny thing.
Can you just get to your question?
All right, ask
yeah, do you have a question? It kind of feels like a filibuster.
It's okay if Hitler just wanted to make Germany great and have things run well.
Mm-hmm.
It says here, adding that it would be problematic if he, quote, had dreams outside of Germany. Mm-hmm. Then the political commentator said that Hitler wanted to globalize and said she doesn't really have an issue with nationalism. He was
okay.
A national socialist. But if Hitler just wanted to make Germany great and have things run well, okay, fine.
Okay.
The problem is that he had dreams outside Germany.
Okay.
He wanted to globalize.
Do you have a question?
What's your question?
My question is, do you stand by that?
What did she say?
Do you stand by that?
Okay, thank you. I'm so glad we got there. Just amazing. Okay, so everybody has seen this, and actually I'm sure a lot of you watched my episode yesterday, so her timing is definitely great, where I had a rabbi on who brought this up. Candace said Hitler was okay. You probably have seen the viral clip of me in Congress where a congressman tried to say Candace said Hitler was okay, and that is definitively not what happened. Actually, I was speaking on stage alongside Charlie Kirk. Rather ironically, there was a room filled with Jewish people, including a Jewish journalist who interviewed me that night, and when I said whatever I said on stage, nobody cared. That was in November 2018. And then 4 months after that in 2019, some journalists pulled out the clip out of context and tried to make it seem like I was saying Hitler was okay. So let me tell you what actually happened on that night. A person rose their hand in the audience after we gave a speech about, and obviously this is during the MAGA years, about this, you know, need to return to having an identity, you know, a national identity. And a woman asked the question, you know, would you say that you're a nationalist? Because I feel like people are sort of afraid to embrace that term. And so I answered her. And I said, I don't have a problem with the word nationalism. Actually, I think a lot of the times the reason why nationalism, the idea of caring about having like your nation's identity and fighting for policies that are pretty much America first, gets poisoned because people wrongly attribute nationalism to Adolf Hitler. It's not like he was just some guy that was in Germany saying, oh, I just want to make Germany great. And then I went on to say, obviously, he invaded Poland. He had globalist ambitions. Like, none of this was okay. That was the end of it. But, of course, when you pull it out of context and you're a journalist who's trying to smear someone, you try to make it seem like the person – I didn't even mention the word Jews. Like, there's not even a question about whether we were talking about Jewish people, the Holocaust, nothing. We were simply talking about the word nationalism and why people have hesitancy when they say that they are a nationalist or when they say that they're America first or whatever. So that was it. That was the end of it. There was no talk about saying Hitler was okay or this was great. It was just a topic about whether or not nationalism is rightly attributed or whether or not it is a dirty word. So I hope that provides some clarity for you.
Nope. Your question was like 20 minutes. Sorry, next. No,
I think we've given you really more than enough time.
And this here is another topic that I made a video on when she was debating Ted Lieu, and he used a very small clip of what she said about nationalism, about Hitler, and pretty much tried to put a hit piece out on her. And just like she said, context matters, intent matters for all these things. That happened to Jordan Peterson, too, with what he's going through in Canada. He has to go to court. Somebody made a complaint, and they filed in their complaint against him stuff that he said on the Joe Rogan podcast. He's been on there 4 or 5 times. You know, 3-hour conversations. You don't have to like somebody, but you're not allowed to just go out and assassinate somebody's character by clipping together a few pieces of conversation that they've said and completely put it out of context into the world so that other people can form an opinion based on this false information that you're giving them. Can't do that. Let's get back to the next clown.
Next.
I'm going to bring up something that you previously had said in the past, but you also brought up again in this speech, so it is relevant. You had talked about climate cooling. Well, actually, wait, before I do, I wish for your health, your continued health, the health of your husband and children.
Thank
all
you.
That's
very sweet.
I just want that. I'd always try to start with that. You had said to Bill Maher on Club Random about climate cooling, and you again brought that up. And Bill pushed back on that, rightfully so, about how climate cooling wasn't ever really used in a large academic sense or a governmental sense. So I was just wondering if you would be able to tell me, like, any level of citation where that climate cooling comes into context outside of the geological formation of volcanoes, which is does cause a climate cooling effect due to the ash coming into the atmosphere causing extreme extermination events.
So I'm not able to provide you a citation because I'm on stage handing, holding a microphone. What I said to you was that if you speak to people of prior generations, they'll tell you that their scare was different. I think it was the generation of the 70s who were told that the climate was going to cool and that freezing was a risk. Now, I can't tell you what happened in their classrooms. Obviously, I wasn't in there, but I can tell you that I bet if you asked around to some adults, they would tell you that they heard, there's some nodding their head right now about global cooling. So I don't know what else to tell you other than people say that that was their scare in the 1970s. I wasn't making a defense for cooling or warming. I was just telling you that every time you are in a classroom and you're in high school, there's always a different climate scare that they're trying to tell you, and they've now finally landed on, in your generation, climate change. So I'm not, you know, debating you on cooling. I can just tell you that they got it wrong, and then the earth started warming, and then they got it wrong again because the earth started cooling, and now they've landed on climate change. So I hope that clarifies what I was talking about, just the generational change. Thank you. Okay, thank you.
For future reference, that clown says, try to back this stuff up. Listen, you're taking a conversation that she had on a 2-hour podcast with Bill Maher. It's a conversation. She's not putting out an article. She was giving her opinion. And listen, Bill Maher, on his own podcast, he gets owned every time he puts out a podcast. This is how you can tell that some of these people on the left, which Bill Maher is, when he does his late night show, it's very scripted, and he's got writers to give him his opinions and all that stuff. So he sounds, I think, smarter than he is. And I have nothing against Bill Maher. He's not necessarily somebody whose content I would consume, but I watch this because some of the guests I like. And he's always getting owned. Candace owned him. And I watched the one with the actor that plays Reacher, that big guy. I forget his name. He's a very Christian man. He owned Bill Maher. Patrick Bet-David recently crushed Bill Maher on his own show. Jillian Michaels, the trainer, crushed him. But again, it was just a conversation they were having on a podcast. They're not putting anything in writing here. Let's get back to it.
Thank you.
Let's get one more. Make it quick.
My bad. You said that sex ed effectively sexualized children, and
yeah.
I was wondering if you had ever heard of the case in Delaware, close to where you're from in Connecticut, where a 10-year-old girl was able to finally tell her mother that she was being sexually abused by her father because she was able to learn sex ed from the It's Perfectly Normal book. Would you like to comment on that, please?
Yeah, sure. So one example does not mean that it impacts the majority at large. I would very much like to believe and know that the majority of people are not 10 years old being, you know, sexually molested by their parents. What you're doing right now is pretty much what the government does. They find one extreme example and try to make everybody fearful that this is going on all the time. This is actually how they introduced sex ed. Everybody's just doing it, and that actually wasn't true. It's never an everybody. Can you find a somebody? Sure. What is the goal of government? Is there ever going to be something that's perfect and you create perfect laws? There's always going to be exceptions. You got to create the rule. You can't have the rule based on exceptions. You know, there are exceptional things that happen all the time. You know, if we said that, you know, one person who got their license when they were age 21 got into a wreck on the day that they got their license, well, so nobody's allowed to get their license, that would be crazy. It's crazy. You have to talk about what the majority is. You have to talk about the majority percentage of experiences. And it is a fact that within 10 years after introducing sex education, the stats completely flipped and the majority of kids were graduating without their virginity, as opposed to prior to that when it was a very different society. Also, what you could say had an impact was that we used to teach the Bible at school. Like, people were basically, you know, Christian. There was a lot more Christianity in the classroom, and that got removed after some lawsuits, I believe that was in the mid-60s, that went all the way to the Supreme Court. But again, the goal of a government is to govern for the whole, not the, you know, fringe minority of circumstances that happen. It doesn't make them any less sad or any less awful, but you can't then base laws and everything that you're doing on them. Hope that helps.
No, I don't care. I don't care. You can only ask.
Yeah, you guys, you've already asked a question, so we're going to go to the next one.
Yeah, when we make these laws, that's why a lot of people get so upset about the LGBTQ trans laws, is because we're changing society to please a very small group of people. When laws should be like cafeteria food, right? You're feeding the masses in a cafeteria at school. If a couple of kids are allergic to a certain odd types of food, too bad. They're going to have to bring their own lunch. You can't change the whole cafeteria setting just for a couple of kids. It's the same idea with laws. You build your laws around most of the people most of the time. On this channel, we watch a lot of video about pro-life versus pro-choice, and the pro-choice people always bring up this very small, less than 0.5% of, well, what if rape is involved or incest is involved? Yeah, at that point, we can talk about it, but you can't build laws and have arguments about these very small, extreme cases. You have to talk, again, about most people most of the time. That's how society works. And at the end of the day, you also have to use facts, because if you use anecdotal evidence in a debate or when you're making laws, anecdotally, two people can debate each other and just have completely different anecdotal evidence, anecdotal stories, but those are not rooted in fact. They're just what happens to you. Kind of like when we talk about racism. Is America a racist country? I would say no. Are there racist people? Could you have been the victim of racism? Absolutely. Anyways, that'll be it for this video. Hope you all enjoyed, and I will catch you all in the next video. Peace out, everybody. I'll say a quick thing here. I'm guessing they're dressed.
White clots are mysteriously turning up in people's arteries and bodies discovered by physicians and morticians. With the amount of censorship that surrounds the issue of COVID, are we ever likely to get the truth about white clots? Ugh. Hello there, you awakening wonder. Thanks for joining us on this voyage to truth and freedom. Remember, click the link in the description. Become a supporter of our content and therefore our movement, that we may facilitate stories that you'll only see covered in places where Dr. John Campbell, God love him, or Neil Oliver are at work. And it is in part their conversation about this subject that we're looking at as we further investigate the extraordinary and rather unpleasantly disgusting to discuss phenomena of white clots. You'll have heard about it and seen it possibly online, but it's plainly not being discussed in the manner, degree, and with the veracity and scientific understanding required, because there is so much confusion, obfuscation, and censorship around the subject of coronavirus and ancillary issues. Let's have a look at, first of all, a conversation between Dr. John Campbell and the brilliant Neil Oliver, so that we can understand what these white clots are. Ugh. Just don't like thinking about it. I don't like thinking about a vein being all clotted up with that stuff. Have you looked at them yet? They're really bloody disgusting. Then we'll look at John Campbell talking to an expert on the subject, and then we'll look at some medical data and medical analysis so that we can understand whether this is something we have to continue to be concerned about and why we're not discussing it more plainly and broadly.
It really is like something out of a low-grade novel, Neil, isn't it? You've got this new or apparently completely new pathology being found in dead bodies around the world. And we know that these have been found, these strange, mysterious, long, rubbery white clots have been found in bodies in the United Kingdom, the United States, Canada, New Zealand, Australia.
Delicious, Cotslow, lovely, bacon rind, lovely.
Now, I've actually heard about these some time ago, but I didn't realize how abundant they were. And then I was interviewing Major Tom Haviland, who is a data analyst in the States. And he's actually reached out to 269 embalmers with an average of 15 years experience each, embalming about 100 bodies a year on average per person. And in the year 2023, 73% of these embalmers have observed these strange white stringy rubbery clots. Really quite incredible. And if you take into account the embalmers that didn't see any, it was still in 20% of the dead bodies. And it seems to be pretty similar in the United States and in the United Kingdom. These rubbery clots.
I don't like the phrase rubbery clots being said again and again and again, but I suppose even more disgusting than the language and the image is the idea that there are emergent phenomena that aren't being plainly discussed. If you consider the amount of propaganda that surrounded the COVID period, how you were informed of all the potential threats and the images of spores and the propaganda films of people coughing out their last and the hospitals that were erected and the internment camps and the medications and the comms were pretty hot, weren't they, and pretty pervasive. There was nothing you didn't hear about. Don't travel here, don't travel there, don't touch this, don't touch that. And all of a sudden, like something, as Dr. John observed, quite sci-fi and simultaneously lo-fi and revolting has emerged, and you're not really hearing it discussed to the degree that it perhaps ought, if it is as prevalent as is suggested.
That can be an inch long or can be up to 30 inches long are there and have been pulled out of the arterial systems and the venous systems of dead bodies. And there's some anecdotal reports of them being pulled out of living bodies by surgeons as well. But we know for sure in about 20% of dead bodies. And these didn't occur prior to 2020.
Okay, so that's the introduction. Before we get into Dr. John's conversation with a well-informed expert on the subject, let's read you a little text. In a world gripped by the relentless march of a pandemic, the discovery of white clots in the deceased has ignited a firestorm of controversy, drawing attention from healthcare professionals, conspiracy theorists, and concerned public alike. I'm all of those, except I'm not a healthcare professional. At the heart of this debate lies a critical question. Is there a link between these unusual clots and mRNA COVID-19 vaccines? When Thai neurologist Dr. Thiravat, referencing the insights of English YouTuber and retired nurse educator Campbell, took to Facebook to discuss the presence of white clots in the carotid arteries of the deceased, the online community took notice. Particularly concerning was Thiravat's suggestion that these clots found in individuals with a history of mRNA COVID vaccinations might be connected to sudden death. I can't see that it would be good to have a 30-inch rubbery white blood clot in your arterial system. I can't imagine that it would be advantageous, and it does seem extraordinary that excess deaths are widely being underreported and mismanaged mathematically by offices of statisticians. That heart disease appears to have significantly risen, that certain types of cancer appear to have risen, that these medications were patented in an unusual way at an unusual time, that the lab leak itself is potentially a result of dual purpose research. There are too many intersecting factors for there now to be an odd H.G. Wells arterial Triffid-like story to emerge without it being cause for concern. Despite his advocacy for vaccination, Thiravat's call for further investigation into these clots stirred a blend of support, skepticism, and outright fear. What other skepticism is? I don't like when people go, stop looking into these. Perhaps it's my own fault that I haven't seen anyone offer a reasonable explanation. And that's what I think censorship obviously fosters. Like, if you saw someone senior and plausible come out and go, look, you're all talking about these rubbery, disgusting white blood clots. Well, it's perfectly natural to have them. What it is as a result of this. In fact, there have always been rubbery white blood clots. But, you know, there's so little trust, isn't there, these days? So much concern, so much censorship, and also a lack of the kind of discourse that I'm suggesting would be helpful. The debate over the white clots and their potential linkage to COVID-19 vaccines has not unfolded in a vacuum. It reflects broader societal tensions around vaccine safety, efficacy, and trust in scientific institutions. In the face of conflicting opinions, the call for rigorous, transparent, and accessible research has never been louder. The crux of the matter lies in distinguishing between correlation and causation, a task that requires meticulous scientific investigation. Yeah, and the ability to listen to a host of diverse experts. What it doesn't need is scientism and censorship, which is what's been going on for the last 5 years. Amid the fervor, Thiravat's decision to cease public discussions on the topic underscores a challenging reality for those advocating vaccine awareness. His ongoing commitment to vaccine safety, without outright opposition to vaccination,
highlighted the nuanced positions individuals may find themselves in when confronting potential public health issues. You can actually take this a lot further than even the issues outlined by this article, that health has become a corrupted industry. That was evident even if you take coronavirus out of it and you look at the opioid crisis that preceded it and the numerous times big pharma companies have settled out of court to repress embarrassing information. If you observe the fact that the FDA is largely funded by pharmaceutical companies and that drugs are often, if not rushed through, then ushered through in order to facilitate profit. When you observe that what would always be a matter for individual choice became a matter of mandate in some instances and compulsion in others, you realize that we've traveled a long way, perhaps without the proper papers to facilitate a journey into the type of trust that was undertaken. In short, I suppose the whole idea of vaccination, even prior to the controversial period that we're now living in, is that they may be good for populations, but when it comes to individuals, you have to ask a question. And when you have a pharmaceutical industry that's incentivized to release products, have products regulated as lightly as possible, but as regular as conceivable, i.e. the normalization of COVID shots, it's flu season, it's COVID season, take these things all the time, you have an extraordinary culture of mistrust. During the time of the pandemic, they became so sort of zealous about the efficacy of vaccines and the absolute need to take them without question. So I think they created this odd climate where people that were sort of skeptical or concerned, like Dr. Jay Bhattacharya or this Dr. Theravat, who are actually not anti-vaxxers at all, that are like doctors, and people like Robert Malone, who I think invented vaccines, they were sort of cast as anti-vaxxers because they were dissenting voices. Now you have this extraordinary climate where people say, oh, actually, I think vaccines are a good thing on the whole for society, and I am a scientist, and I'm dedicated to pharmacology, and this is the world I live in. However, there may be a corollary between these medications and these odd, disgusting white blood clot things. There's this odd veil of secrecy and inability to openly discuss it, which is the sort of thing that often surrounds, if I may say, corporate crime outside of this context. So you can't claim that we're all supposed to be following the science. And then when scientists happen to be dissenting, right, you're not the sort of scientist, well, then what's the argument now? The argument is shut up and listen. And that's what sort of medieval religious power behaved like. There is one true God, shut up, we don't care, we're not interested, we'll burn you, you're a heretic.
All I said to my wife was, that piece of halibut was good enough for Jehovah.
Oh, we have had orthodoxies of condemnation and censure. There have always been that. That's what power does to ensure its power is not challenged. So I think that the discipline of science was exploited during this period, and that's why you can't have clear, open conversations around these subjects. I suppose that when it comes to medical matters, even in the event of it being a contagious condition, it has to remain a matter of personal responsibility. Because otherwise, when you have compelled medications, you're making some extraordinary claims about society. You can't all of a sudden, not now, not in this climate, say, we all have to take these vaccines because we're all in it together. Well, economic inequality, constant war, Gaza, the Ukraine, I mean, that it just doesn't make sense in this context. So I suppose, yeah, the idea now that something sort of disgusting and visually evocative, like white rubbery sinew appearing in arteries and the conversation about it being somewhat censored, dampened down, controlled, not fully illuminated and explored, it's a further indication that indeed we are living in unusual times where a real reckoning and appraisal of what the role of public health is, what the role of vaccines are, and what our individual freedom ought look like. As society navigates these turbulent waters, the importance of critical thinking, open dialogue, and reliance on credible sources of information becomes ever more apparent. The quest for truth in this case is not just about white clots or vaccines, it's about how we as a collective address fear, uncertainty, and the hunger for answers in an age of information overload. The resolution to the debate over white clots may just be a piece of a much larger puzzle in understanding and combating the COVID-19 pandemic. That seems like good analysis. Let's have a look at Dr. John Campbell's conversation with Major Tom.
These things are solid, aren't they? They're, you know, if that's the lumen of the blood vessel, then this white stuff is like filling up the whole gap in the middle, isn't it?
Don't be childish.
Yeah, well, we think it's growing, right? So it's
at
some point it's smaller, right? And blood's still able to flow around. But then at some point it completely blocks off a vessel or embolism breaks off and goes through a critical juncture. And that's when you get your stroke or heart attack. So, you know, it may be a process where it takes maybe 6 months, maybe 12 or 18 months for these to grow to the size that they become dangerous to a living person.
Really? So they could be growing for some months.
Could be.
I like old Dr. John Campbell style, because when he said, oh, it could be going for some months, because Dr. John Campbell has to be careful of YouTube restrictions. So when he does things like, oh, really, what he means is, so what time were the vaccines administered? Oh, 12 to 18 months. He's still doing the maths for us.
We're not sure, but that the data that I've collected seems to indicate that's a possibility. Because
wow.
Some of the embalmers didn't start seeing the white fibrous clots until the middle of 2021, after a certain event happened earlier that year.
I think everyone in the wonderful world of euphemism tiptoeing their way around guidelines that exist actually precisely to stop this conversation happening. Isn't it unusual? Either way, you're living in an unusual time. It's weird, isn't it?
Let's go back a bit. 2020.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people getting the Wuhan version of the SARS coronavirus 2 and then into the Alpha. And that's before the vaccine rollout, of course, when this disease was presumably rampant because there was no vaccination. Were you getting any reports of these white things, whatever we call them, happening in 2020?
I did indeed, John, to a lesser extent. In our first survey, 44 of the embalmers, we got 179 responses from embalmers in our first survey that we did last year, and 44 of those embalmers did see the white fibrous clots, and that makes sense because, like I said, there's a spike protein on the surface of the virus itself, and we believe that spike protein on the virus itself can lead to the formation of these amyloid proteins.
That's interesting because obviously what a lot of people say, no, it's coronavirus that's causing these clots. So it's not the fault of vaccines and therefore science. But then you might think for a few seconds longer about the origins of coronavirus and why it's got that spike protein. And you will be forced to conclude that it emerged from the Wuhan Institute of Virology where they were doing dual purpose research, and you're back to the same culprits.
But then the embalmers saw that explode in 2021 when we had the advent of the rollout of the medical intervention. So many more embalmers saw the phenomenon in 2021. And as we know, there's a rationale for that, right? Because the medical intervention was supposed to stay in your deltoid muscle and produce just enough of the spike protein to elicit an immune response and do that for just a couple of days a week, and then its job is done. It's got you ready for COVID when it came. But we know now that that's not what happened at all. The medical intervention goes all over your body, turning your whole body into a spike protein factory, and it can do that for months at a time. So the scientists that I've talked to, John, believe that it's exacerbated or supercharged the effect of the formation of these white fibrous clots.
I just have to take a breath, Tom, to pause so I don't get cross. You know, we were told exactly what you said, and it was wrong. These lipid nanoparticles are systemically distributed. They go everywhere. And we're just starting to learn some of the consequences of that. Misinformation, lie, whatever, propaganda, or whatever you want to call it. But we'll just stick with this. So 2021, 2022. Did the amount that we're seeing remain constant 2021, 2022, 2023?
We just checked this year. The percentage of corpses that contained the white fibrous clots went down from an average of about 30% down to 20%.
It's in 2023.
In 2022, it was about 30% of corpses contained these white fibrous clots.
5% of corpses, that's just too many, isn't it? Something that didn't exist at all, now being extraordinarily common, is cause for investigation, the same as excess deaths. And you'll note that the response to excess deaths has been to change the way that deaths are recorded. And I feel like it's difficult not to correlate this information and conclude that something unusual is happening. Even when you see Dr. John Campbell sort of rather articulately describe the disparity between what we were initially told the vaccines, you know, they won't even call them that, will they anymore, medications, whatever you want to call them, were supposed to do, remain on site and elicit a small manufacture or a response of the creation of spike proteins, but actually no, they distribute throughout the whole body. You know, it all sort of starts to make sense because you've heard it all now, and all of us that don't have the kind of medical understanding that Dr. John does and his partner in this video are beginning to understand through this sort of couple of years of education that really you can't trust what you were told in the first place, and you have to be very aware about what you put into your body and the motives of the people that might want to put it there.
Like wow. I'm showing here. Yeah. But in 2023, that went down to 20%. And that's not necessarily a vindication of the medical intervention. Because if you remember, here in America, about 80% of adults over the age of 18 had at least the first two medical interventions way back in 2021. But only about 20% of Americans took the BA4, BA5 bivalent Omicron booster in the fall of 2022. And even less Americans, about 15%, John, took the XBB 1.5 booster that came out last fall of 2023. So as you get further and further away from the medical interventions, you might expect to see less of these white fibrous clots, which is indeed what embalmers said in 2023.
All of these inquiries that are taking place, like, can you imagine, in a sensible world, that would be included in the inquiry, wouldn't it? I remember the first time I heard embalmers are finding weird stuff. It's just like, oh, it sort of sounds too much like a conspiracy theory that you're sort of consulting morticians on anomalies. It sounds just too odd. But now it actually is data sets of during this period there was a huge wave and then it subsided during this period. And avoiding the conclusions that appear to suggest themselves, it feels like a level of obedience that I just can't personally live with anymore.
Basically, I think we've identified a temporal correlation and a quantitative temporal correlation there.
Well, you know, we can't necessarily say correlation's not necessarily causation, John.
No. People say that a lot lately, don't they? Because it's become a convenient phrase, like whataboutism. And you can't say whataboutism, like, you know, what about our invasion of Iraq? If invasion's bad, like when Russia invades Ukraine, how come it was all right for us to keep invading Iraq? You hear your accent, yeah? Shut up.
No.
But, you know, I'm seeing an awful lot of correlation here, so I'll just let you know that.
Causation isn't correlation, but you're seeing quite a lot of correlation. I don't know what's causing it, but could it be causation? It's an extraordinary time we're living in, and these hideous, ghouling, gruesome, gory, white blood clot things seem to be a kind of remnant emblem, a souvenir of a rather disgusting time that we've all lived through, an inconvenient piece of detritus that will have to be addressed at some point, probably by us and responsible physicians like those we've just seen communicating, because it's unlikely to crop up in the COVID inquiry in our country, the various inquiries in your country, and throughout the world. It'll be one of those things that's just parceled off into indefinite delay, which is what's happening in the COVID inquiry in our country, specifically with reference to vaccines. And I wonder why that might be in an election year, perhaps so that the globalist agenda can continue. But that actually isn't based on scientific data. That's based on what I call common sense. But that's just what I think. Why don't you let me know what you think in the comments and chat? Why don't you click the link in the description if you want to join our movement and get additional content every single week and be part of a movement that cares about challenging, confronting, and changing all this. Stay free.
Hey, thanks for watching. If you want to see more uncensored content where free speech can flourish, join our live stream. Click the link right here to watch the next video if you want to, or become a member of a growing movement. Download the Rumble app and you'll be informed every time we make a new piece of content. Stay free.